Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 30th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. And if you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anybody would like to email a question, send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, we're going to start off tonight. We're looking into God's Word. We're going to look into Proverbs chapter 15, I think. Yeah, 15, verses 1 through 16. Proverbs 15, 1 through 16. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. A fool despises his father's instructions, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. In the house of righteous is much more treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. The lips of a wise man disperses knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. The way of the wicked is an abomination unto the Lord, but he loveth him that followeth after righteousness. Correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. Hell and destruction are before the Lord. How much more, then, the hearts of the children of men? A scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken. The heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of the fool feedeth on foolishness. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasures and trouble therewith. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 through 16. Okay, tonight's topic, I've been back and forth on whether we were going to read anything tonight. We just did finish a paper that we're going to be filing into the courts this week. Well, I won't say this week. It's going to take us a week to print it out, put it together, stuff it, stamp it, and mail it. So we're shooting for a target date of next Monday, the 7th. So December 7th is the day we're anticipating sending this out. Anybody wants to get a copy of this, we do have a draft. It is still in draft form. We haven't perfected it yet. We're working through, you know, the mistakes and also maybe changing a few words here or there. So we're still cleaning it up. But I think pretty much it's going to be pretty much what it is. You can find a copy of this if you go and highlight committees. Okay, no, I'm sorry, highlight directory. Highlight directory. And come down and click on the power of the sheriff. Highlight directory. Click on the power of the sheriff. And come down towards the bottom of the page, and you'll see documents. Under the memos is another group of documents, and it's number 13 called Draft, Mandamus to Congress and Governors. Now, this is, I think, an extremely important paper, and I think all the papers we do are important. We've been building up for a long time, a lot of paperwork. This is the 13th paper that we're filing in, but we're now filing papers in very personally, personalizing the papers and serving them on individuals with the individuals' names on it. So it would come beyond the basic mandamuses and the basic informations, and we're now coming and we're opening a court of record. At first, this paper was written to go to Congress, but then it was realized that we should include the governors in on this. So this paper is going to be going out to all 50 governors, and they're going to be included into a court case. They're expected to respond. If they don't respond, they're expected to respond in action. And the response in action is much more than what we want. We're going to read this paper. It's 6 pages. And it's going out to 430 congressmen, 100 senators, and 50 governors. And it's going to be filed in all 94 courts. Now, we're going to take the time to be able to put this thing together in a way that this is going to be filed within their respective courts. For instance, let's take a simple state like Alaska, for instance. It has only one district. Utah has one district. There's a few states that just have one district. So all of the congressmen for that state and all of the senators for that state, there's two senators for every state, will be filed in, their names will be printed onto the paper, and the governor of that state, so it will be very individualized, and then it will be filed in that federal court in their state, in their district. And we're going to do that throughout the states. Now, there are some states that have 2 districts, 3 districts, and even 4 districts. New York is one of those states that has 4 districts. California has 4 districts. Goodness, I think Texas might have more than 4 districts. I don't know. They're pretty big. But anyway, the states with more districts, I'm not sure exactly how we're going to divide them yet. We may, because we need to include the governor only in on one of those. And then we may have a little bit of a problem trying to figure out the senators on which one we might file in. So that's something, a technical thing we'll have to figure out. We may end up taking a particular district and file it basically in one, but serve it on all 4 districts or 3 districts or 2 districts within that state. But collectively, the name of the congressman for that state, the name of the senators for that state, and the name of the governor for that state will receive this. Now, this paper, in order to print it out, it's going to, you know, take about 10 reams of paper and quite a few envelopes, obviously, and stamps, a lot of toner, and a lot of time, a lot of crimping with the hand, you know, the hand crimpers for the seal. And so it's going to take all week probably to put this together and get it, you know, out. And I'm kind of hoping to start working on this tomorrow, dated for the 7th, which is Monday, and out. And after I read this, you know, we'll see once what people think. Again, I think it's a very strategic and important paper for the times and what's going on today. And really, it's time to ramp up. It's time for the people to really step up and do something here. We can no longer have people sitting on the sidelines not participating. Look it. The question is, do you want to save America? It's that simple. Either you want to save America or you don't care, okay? But it takes time and it takes money. We need people involved. We have lots of phone calls we need to make. We need to ramp up. We need to start putting the pressure on these judges, putting the pressure on sheriffs. And so people need to be making contact with some of the national leaders and get lined up and get ready to come in. They'll tell you who to contact maybe, and maybe Gary will handle some of this in the call tonight. I don't know. He's not aware of what I'm talking about yet, but he'll figure it all out. But basically, when we have spoken a little bit about this, we need to start calling these people up and putting the pressure on, need to get letter writing. We need to get a hold of a lot of the people that don't come to our calls and people who aren't paying too close attention. We need to wake them up and we need to get moving. You know, no one person is going to save the nation. Only the people can do it. So it's up to you. You know, if you want to save the nation, let's do it. We're going to go forward with this and hopefully everybody's going to get behind us. This particular first part of this project, which is a two-part project, really, what we'd like to do, This is going to run an easy $1,500, maybe more. And, you know, I did ask for some monies last month that were behind the bills and so on and so forth. We did get some people who donated nice amounts, and we got people who donated that hadn't donated before. And so we got helpful, and we pretty much caught up on the bills. But I'm going to take a leap of faith and go forward with starting spending $1,500 to $2,000, whatever it's going to cost, to get this next project out. And I'm going to, you know, move in faith and hope that people are going to start giving more. And I don't mean people giving more per se, but I mean the people who aren't given to give. Also, from time to time, people who are given $5 a month or 10 bucks a month, you know, when we do a project like this, hopefully they'll send us an extra 10 bucks or 50 bucks or 20 bucks or something. We got to pay for this somehow. So one way or the other, we're going to walk by faith that we're going to cover the bills for this month, and we're just going to take $1,500 or whatever it's going to cost off the top and do it. So again, it's quite a bit of paper, printing, quite a bit of stuffing, crimping, and really organizing in such a way that we don't get it confused, because we're separating all of the different federal districts. So it's a lot of work. And I'll see if I can't get a bunch of volunteers in New York, but I'm not too sure how much I want to shop out and not be present for that, because it's got to go in the right envelopes. So I might end up handling it myself and maybe work it out with my daughter and my son and my wife, and maybe they'll, you know, work together with me and we'll get it done. But we're going to get it done one way or the other. Now, the big, big project comes up next month. I'd like to have done it this month, but it's just not going to work out. And I thought about it, you know. We send this out on the 7th. They're going to be going on Christmas holiday and, you know, so on and so forth. I think between now and the 1st, I'd like to plan a paper for the 1st, January 1st, dated January 1st, and drop it in the mail on January 2nd. Or dated the 2nd and drop it on the 2nd, one or the other. But it's going to take a lot of time to put this one together. We need to do something very special to the sheriffs and to the marshals. We need to put the sheriff's name on a paper in his own federal district, and we need to file it and mail it directly to him, a hard paper, and he needs to respond. He needs to respond in action, ultimately, or show cause on why he doesn't. But it's going to be a, you know, regular court paper, filing in the courts, and going forward. And we did this with the chief judges and the chief clerks just 2 weeks ago. But this is going to be a little more personal, and we'll read tonight, and we'll see once on what I'm talking about. But also, hang on a second. All right. Anyway. Now, we're going to go forward with this document tonight. I did talk it over with Gerard and see what he thought, and he thought it was a good idea to read this document. It's short, but it does need to be proofread and for perfection as far as punctuation. But I don't think much words on this paper is going to change at all. There were certain things that had to be said in this paper, and we tried not to waste any time. And maybe by reading it aloud, maybe we'll be able to cut some things out. So that might be helpful also. But anyway, we're going to go read forward. I'm going to read this paper. It's 6 pages. Again, it's called The Draft. It's number 13. And let me see. You'll find it on. I'm going to give it one more time. You go to Directory, highlight Directory. Come down to the Power of the Sheriff. Scroll down below the documents, and you'll see items 01 through 13. And 13, it says draft mandamus to Congress and governors. I really do want to read this a little premature. Usually we don't read it until after we send it out. But we know that they have spies here. Let them get the word that it's coming. Let them hear about it. Let them go talk. They'll get a copy. Hey, we want them to read it. That's the whole point to this whole thing. And it'll give them a little time to think. They need time to think because they're very slow thinkers and reactors. They take their time with everything. And that's one of the problems we're having with the mandamuses. I mean, not the mandamuses, the habeas corpuses. You know, I think we moved a little too quick, but nevertheless, we've got what we got going. And we have to give them a little time before we start indicting. We're at that point of indictments. And we have to plan that very strategically on how we go forward. We've got to make sure we've given them enough time to read and digest what's going on and to understand that we need business. And I also think by filing these papers, the ones we filed last week, 2 weeks ago, and the ones we're going to be filing next week, which is the one we're going to read tonight, I think that these papers help to acclimate the knowledge and the understanding and the realization of what we're going to do throughout the system. And that's why it's so important that we have to get a personal paper to all of these people on the federal level and a personal paper to all of the sheriffs. And again, that's going to be a big project to get that done. Okay, so let's go through this paper. I'm going to read it. It should go rather quickly. It's not too long, 6 pages. And it's a, now on the top, we just have 100 U.S. senators, 430 U.S. congressmen, and 50 governors. And of course, as I mentioned, we're going to personalize this. It starts off, writ mandamus ordered to show cause in writ centuria. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, the Sureties of the Peace, also known as the Judicial Tribunal, hereinafter the UUSCLGJ, on behalf of we the people of the United States of America, in this court of record, under our own authority, commands the above said U.S. senators, U.S. congressmen, and governors to uphold their oaths by requiring constitutional authority before proceeding with any legislation or act, or show cause by what authority you act contrary. Now, of course, there's footnotes, and we're not reading the footnotes, and people should go back and read those. The Declaration of Independence initiated the beginning of the United States of America, thereby creating government by consent of we the people. That fact remains constant. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. After a 13-year struggle against tyrants, foreign and domestic, we the people ordained a Republican Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights, which defined the purpose of our government in the preamble, thereby establishing 6 directives to guide all our elected servants. We the people of the United States of America, in order to 1. Form a more perfect union, 2. Establish justice, 3. Ensure domestic tranquility, 4. Provide for the common defense, 5. Promote the general welfare, and 6. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That was the Constitution preamble. The Constitution's capstone Bill of Rights, also known as the Bill of Prohibition, forbids any constitutional conclusions repugnant to our liberties. Therefore, the body of the Constitution lists the powers given and its capstone restricted powers. And any power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The Bill of Rights also clarifies that Congress is not to make laws respecting the unalienable rights of our freedom of religion, free speech, free press, the right to assemble, petition the government for redress of grievances, the militia, keep and bear arms, the right to be secured against unreasonable search and seizures, the right of an unfettered trial and grand jury, protection against double jeopardy, right not to be witnessed against himself, right of due process in common law courts, a speedy and a public trial, the right to confront witnesses and obtain witnesses in his favor, the right of assistance of counsel, and excessive bail, excessive fines, cruel and unusual punishments shall not be imposed. Yet Congress continues legislation destructive to liberty without shame. We the people elected representatives to represent the will of their constituents and exercise powers within the boundaries of the Constitution and not take 40 pieces of silver from special interest groups. There are 18 legislative powers given to our legislative branch of government, among which there is given no authority to initiate chancery courts, only common law courts, which is an unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment. No authority to cloak government agencies with corporations. No authority to replace our Constitution with corporate charters that serve special interest groups and not the people. No authority to create the privately owned Federal Reserve Corporation. No authority to impose a direct tax. No authority to create fiat money. No authority to spy on the people. No authority to prepare for martial law and the suspension of the Constitution in America. No authority to close down our armories across America. No authority to restrict funding of militias. No authority to change our republic to a democracy. No authority to yield their lawmaking to the bar and other foreign powers for congressional passage. No authority to transfer ownership or control of our post office to foreigners. No authority to house foreign troops on American soil. No authority to legislate Article III courts into de facto chancery courts, and no authority to legislate statutes or codes repugnant to the Constitution. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of the law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, confers no right, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, that's the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no court are bound to enforce it. Bonnet versus Valia. The law of the land. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. U.S. Constitution, Article 6. Our courts are to be courts of justice, which are virtuous courts as defined by Black's law, and therefore are to be governed by biblical principles, not the will of men. Such courts are to protect the unalienable rights of we the people, not tread upon them. A constitution is in fact and must be regarded by the judges as a fundamental law. It therefore belongs to them to ascertain its meaning, as well as the meaning of any particular act proceeding from the legislative body. If there should happen to be an irreconcilable variance between the two, that which has the superior obligation and validity ought, of course, to be preferred. Or, in other words, the Constitution ought to be preferred to the statute, and the intention of the people to the intention of their agents. Alexander Hamilton, Federalist number 78. It is empathetically the providence and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Chief Justice John Marshall in Marbury versus Madison, 1803. When the Constitution is ignored, legislations repugnant to the Constitution enacted in judgment contrary to the law of the land, whether legislated or bench created, these actions become the evidence of the desertion of allegiance, and thereby actions advocating the overthrow of our constitutional form of government. U.S. Code 5 U.S. Code, subsection 7311, loyalty. An individual may not accept or hold a position in government of the United States or the government of the District of Columbia if he, Number one, advocates the overthrow of a constitutional form of government, corporatism. Number two, is a member of an organization that he knows advocates the overthrow of the constitutional form of government, Bar Association. Constitutional Republic versus Corporatism. Our federal Republican government is an agency of the United States of America, the 50 United States of America, not a corporation. Our government's agents, under oath, are entrusted to serve, uphold, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America. It is the machinery by which the sovereign powers in a state expresses its will and exercises its function, or the framework of political institutions, departments, and offices, by means of which the executive, judicial, legislative, and administrative businesses of the state is carried on by consent through a constitution. Subverts, without any constitutional authority, through bribery, extortion, and coercion, lobbied Congress and succeeded in the incorporating the United States, all 50 states, all 3,142 counties, all cities, towns, and villages that are now operating under a corporate charters in place of our Constitution, thereby enforcing unconstitutional statutes and programs like Agenda 21 through corporate, state, county, city, town, and villages, police departments, and courts, thereby turning our Republican form of government into corporatism, which is an instrumentation of fascism under the control of tyrants. Anti-Federalist, number 4143, Part 2, Richard Henry Lee. The Constitution provides, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 and 18, that Congress shall have the sole exclusive government of what is called the federal city, a place not exceeding 10 miles square, and of all places seated for forts, dockyards, etc. I believe this is a novel kind of provision in a federal republic. Subversive Congresses past have legislated the creation of a corporate city controlled by an oligarchy within Washington, D.C., in lieu of the federal city controlled by the states through the Senate, which was also subverted by a 1913 Congress passed the 17th Amendment, which took away control of the federal cities from the states. It was never ratified and would be repugnant to the same. See California State Archives, National Archives, and documents obtained by Bill Benson from all 48 state legislators for incontrovertible proof that the Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, on May 31, 1913, knowingly and willfully issued a memo that Congress acted upon, declaring the 17th Amendment ratified, even though he knew the required number of states did not ratify it. Because rights are unalienable, that places all judgments under the tribunal of the universe, the triune God, whose bench are principled people. Therefore, virtue, which is synonymous with justice, must be preserved in courts of justice applying common law. Because we, the people, as expressed in our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, called upon nature's God to receive the blessings of God under the law of nature, they became entitled under common law, whereby no man can lawfully separate. Therefore, we, the people, entitled by God, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. This placed we, the people, under God, the Constitution under the people, and the government servants under the Constitution. Any acts by Congress, governors, or the judiciary to sabotage the Constitution through legislation, dereliction of duty, or summary judgments engage in treason, an act of war against the Constitution and we the people. Therefore, any legislator or judge who rests in de facto laws is self-deceived, without excuse, and in imminent danger of judgment. The unalienable rights of the people to have an organized, armed, and disciplined militia, which is necessary to the security of a free state, protected by the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed upon, but provided for by Congress and acted upon by governors See the Militia Act of 1792. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. The Congress shall provide for the common defense and general welfare or well-being of the United States. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15. To provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16. To provide for the organizing, arming, and disciplining of the militia and for the governing of such parts as them as may be employed in the services of the United States, reserving to the states respectfully the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Wherefore, we the people ordained in Article 8, Clause 15 and 16 the provisions for the security of the states. We the people ordained in Amendment 2 that a well-regulated militia and the right of the people to keep and bear arms as is necessary, unalienable right of security and self-defense. We the people did not empower Congress with the authority to create a politically controlled armed force called Homeland Security Agency, which is both a danger and an abomination to liberty, leaving the people defenseless and vulnerable to tyrants, the cause of the making of America. Congress is commanded by Constitution, obligated by oath, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15 and 16, to immediately provide for the reestablishing and restocking of armories necessary to the security of a free state in all 3,142 counties, or show by what authority you do not act. Congress is commanded by Constitution, obligated by oath, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16, to immediately provide for the organizing, arming, and disciplining of the militia for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectfully the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia to show by what authority you do not act. And I know that was wrongly written. I'll have to fix that. Congress is commanded by Constitution, obligated by oath, Article 4, Section 4, to void all unconstitutional acts and agencies or show cause by what authority you do not act. Congress is commanded and obligated by oath not to legislate war against the Constitution and commanded that they state the article, section, and clause establishing the authority of any proposed legislation. Governors are commanded by Constitution, obligated by oath, under Amendment 2 and Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16, to immediately communicate to Congress their need to accomplish the restoration of the militia in every county, or show cause by what authority you do not act. If governors are met by resistance from Congress, they are obligated by oath under Article 4, Section 4, to do everything in his power to defend the Constitution and save the Union. The Court, dated December 7, 2015, sealed and signed by the grand jury foreman. Writ mandamus centuria, order to show cause. Okay, 6 pages, and it also gets a cover page to the courts, which is a file on demand and a warning to the clerk of prison sentences should they fail to file the paper. Okay, that paper, again, it does need a little correction, but pretty much it's pretty much there, and we will be updating that paper. It's a draft. It will update it as soon as we get it perfected, and hopefully we'll do that tomorrow, and hopefully we'll start printing this stuff off tomorrow and start stuffing envelopes and getting them prepared to be dropped into the mail on December 7th, 2015, which is Monday. And then we'll be working, as soon as we get that completed, we're going to be working on the very special letter to the sheriffs. We got some good ideas on what we're going to be talking to them about. But it's time for them to understand who and what they are. They are constitutional officers. Their only purpose is to protect the Constitution, to enforce. That's their only purpose. That is their code. Protect and defend the Constitution. And if they don't understand and they don't know the Constitution, how can they protect it and how can they defend it? That is the question. And that is why we've been working very diligently over these past months, sending out memos to sheriffs, sending out these papers to all of our elected officials and copying also a copy to every sheriff. We're now going to start sending out papers to sheriffs not only by fax but by email. We're still collecting data. We're still collecting information. We're still collecting addresses. We need help. We can't do it ourselves. You know, we have a lot. We have some resistance. We've got, I think, about a dozen papers that we have filed already. We've got many coming behind it, but we've got a dozen filed. Some of them have been sitting around for a while. We've responded very slowly. It's time to kind of turn up the speed and start to turn up the pressure. And before we start indictments, which I believe we'll be moving towards this week, at least the preparation and the writing up of the indictments for judges, for clerks, for lawyers, all those who are being held at this very moment in contempt of court. Before we start doing that, which again I think we're going to start doing, getting the paperwork prepared, but we're going to get this paper out first, and then I think we are finally primed for the point of indictments. And we'll talk a little more about that later on in the future. I don't want to get into that discussion tonight. We have letters that we need to respond to sheriffs, a couple of them, no big, not a whole bunch of them, and also to judges and a few other, a lawyer here, a firm here or there, that are in contempt of court and need to be, put straight. We do have one or two sheriffs that are really out of control. They want no part of hearing about the Constitution. And they're doing things that are just way out of line. I know we're going to work overtime not to go after sheriffs, but we may not have a choice in these one or two cases. But we'll see how they're going to behave. And then we'll go from there. All right, let me just quickly move through a few other things I need to talk about before I pass things over to Gerard. We got some questions that have come in on the email. let's see... Okay, we got a caller who wanted a summary of a three-hour Monday night conference call. Every week, the three-hour Monday night conference call is transcribed and can be made available for any member who would like a copy. The minutes are usually 12 pages long, and there's an individual, Jim, from Allegheny County. I know I've spoke to Jim on a few occasions. It's been a while. I'm going to try to get a hold of him because I guess he's going through the process of having this written up. So we're going to try to make that available. I'll make connection with Jim out there in Allegheny County in Pennsylvania and see what we can do about providing that. Okay, why are we attempting to get the common law grand jury administrators in the counties but not the U.S. District Courts? There are also Article III courts and are currently controlled by the government. Well, that's not true. Actually, we are trying to develop each county, but we are working in the federal courts. When it comes to the federal courts, we do have a presence in all 94 districts. These federal courts cover a certain number of counties. Let me take a for instance, generally speaking. In New York State, we have 62 counties, and we have four federal districts. That's 15.5 counties, 15, 16 counties per federal district. Well, we have lots of members in those 15 counties in each one of those federal districts. So we do have enough people to act upon as administrators throughout the state of New York. And this is true probably throughout every state in the union. We have people, and we only need four administrators in each federal district. And, of course, if we have six or eight or ten, we'll use them all in the beginning, of course. So we are really, at this point, ready to 100% move into the federal courts as far as manpower is concerned. Now, education is another matter. I certainly hope all the people who are anticipating to make the move to help save America when the time comes or have been busy educating themselves. And it starts right here, the National Liberty Alliance, by going up and starting with the civics course and connecting with different committees and getting involved. That's the education. As I mentioned last week and the week before maybe, I forget when, but recently I mentioned the fact that we are putting together some more courses. We're putting a constitutional course. We're also writing a booklet, a handbook on how to operate as administrators. And everything you're going to need to know and do in the courts, once you move in as administrators, will be found in the handbook. If we miss something, well, we'll update it. But basically, I think we got most, I think we got everything covered. But, you know, of course, I'm sure there's something we haven't thought of, and someone will find, and we'll produce it and put it in. So we're preparing as best we can, but the people have to get educated, you know. We have a lot of people in jeopardy, at least two or more people right away that are in jeopardy of either losing their home or losing their freedom. And coming into the courts on Wednesdays, this Wednesday, I believe, a couple of them, we do have habeas corpuses in. I want to call out for Gary to organize with, you know, the... who is handling that? I'm not sure who we got in charge at this point on the courtroom observers group. But anyway, Gary, we're calling out to you, Gary, to make sure that this happens. Let's work it out. Get a hold of me. Get a hold of Gerard. Get a hold of Linda. Let's find out who these people are. Let's get the, you know, as far as the judges are concerned, and let's start making some phone calls to put the pressure on these people. And we're also going to be following up with papers. We're moving towards contempt in the two particular cases. I think we may have already done a contempt on one of them already. But again, you know, what people have to understand, we have to have patience. We have to move slowly and surely and be patient. If we're going to move too quickly, not only are we going to make mistakes, it's just the work is not going to get done. It's not going to get done properly. Also, we need time for this information to acclimate through all of these federal districts, all of these judges, all of these clerks, and now through Congress. You know, by writing this paper to Congress and putting their hide on the fire here, so to speak, okay, that's pressure that's going to put upon the courts, okay? We're revealing the sins, okay? And we maybe we'll add another, well, I'm not going to talk about that yet. We'll see what happens on the final draft of this paper, and if we add anything substantial, we'll come up to read that new part that was substantial that we added, and we'll see where that goes. Okay, let's see what else I have here. Are there other ways to listen to National Liberty Alliance's Monday forum? I know some people were complaining because they call in by cell, or they have some, and they don't have phones that are able to get the good reception, or they burn out because the battery runs, and so on and so forth. And they may not be aware, you know, look at, you can go and come in by browser, click on the Monday night call and follow the instructions on how to listen to us over your internet browser. Whatever browser you use, it doesn't matter, it'll get the sound. And if you got a headset, you will be able to talk to them through that browser connection. And it's some kind of a little dial-up thing that you click in through your browser, and it puts this little special browser out that makes that connection and connects your microphone. So if you have a headset, you know, with a mic on it, you can talk and raise your hand and so on and so forth. Okay, let's see what other questions we may have. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, I think that ends our questions. May have one more here. Let me read this to see if this is a question. Let me just read it out loud and see if it's a question or not, and if I can respond to it. Why is the state not to be considered an injured party when bringing up jurisdictional issues in court? I understand the reason is that it is not one of the people, i.e., a fiction. If that be true, then all corporations are not to be considered injured parties, yes or no. Well, you know, a corporation can't sue a person, an individual. I mean, I think if you really think that out, it becomes clearly logically obvious, okay? Now, that doesn't mean that the owner of a corporation, you know, from an individual perspective, can't sue. But a fiction can't sue a reality. It just can't happen. Can a reality sue a fiction? Well, I don't see why that couldn't happen that way. But of course, you're going to go after the people behind the fiction anyway. So that's the other side. I'm not sure whether I understood all of the question, but I think that was the basic concern. And the other part is, why is the state not to be considered an injured party? Well, the state is the problem. The fact is that the state has been corrupted, and we have out-of-control individuals that are in powerful positions within the state, such as the judges, and even the elected officials, our representatives. They're not paying attention. They're not becoming educated. They're not understanding what's going on. And this gets back to the sheriff. Once we get the sheriff educated and the marshals educated, and I really think that by the time we send the next paper out, the one that's going to have the name of the sheriff and the name of the marshal, I don't know that I mentioned the marshal in that too, and the name of the FBI, I know I didn't mention that. We want to do all three. You know, there is one FBI special agent in charge in every federal district, just one, and they are appointed by the President of the United States. There is one federal marshal in every federal district, and he too is appointed by the President of the United States. Now, I know as much as the I may be off on the FBI special agent in charge because it's not in the Constitution, but I do know that the marshal, once he's appointed, cannot be unappointed or removed from office until his term is up for any reason whatsoever, with the exception, of course, of being indicted. And, of course, the sheriff is an elected individual, cannot be removed from office by anybody or for any reason except indictment. Okay? So these are two very powerful positions. They need to understand that, and they need to understand that they are the constitutional offices. Gerard, you got your mic open. They are the Constitution. Jan, you got your mic open. They are the constitutional offices, okay? Now, they need to respond. They need to understand the Constitution. And I think this next paper, which puts them personally right into a court of record that they need to answer to or respond in a way in action, okay? And we'll find out their proper action when we start doing things inside their counties and expect for them to uphold the law, okay? They've been final. That'll be their final paper that they need to step up. And we're going to make that clear and refer to a lot of the memos and make reference to different things that we've given to them and other papers we've written and where those papers are located so that we can keep the papers minimum in number, you know, under six pages, but also give them a tremendous amount of information and a place to become educated at. And so I think at that point we will be ready to really push real hard, and we need the floodgates to open, we need the people to get involved. And that means that everybody in National Liberty Alliance that's awake and conscious of what we're doing needs to step up to bat and get involved. They need to get into the list and be given information to make phone calls or write a letter or do something to put the pressure on. Without the pressure, we get nothing. Okay. All right. I think that pretty much brings it up to as far as I can go tonight. Gerard, are you ready to take the mic here?
Yeah, I have a few people that we've got scheduled to talk. I'm going to lead off with Jan. I don't know why my board is not showing me who's talking. I only got like 9 people on.
What you might want to do is bail out of that and come back in.
Yeah, I've refreshed it a couple times, but I will bail out. But Jan, go ahead.
Okay.
And
sure.
Take off.
Just one other thing before Jan goes. Just so, you know, anybody has any questions or comments about anything we read and anything else that's going on, we'll have the Q&A later on, and I'll be listening in to respond to any questions that are directed towards me. Go ahead, Jan.
Okay, I'm gonna leave my Skype on so I can hear. I'm just gonna reboot the free conference call. But go ahead, Jan. You got a couple things that you want to do there, so I'll take that opportunity. Thanks.
John, you asked about the courtroom observers, and the director of the courtroom observers is Robert Overhew, and he can be reached at 2.
Well, that's right. I remember Robert Overhew. Yeah, let the people know, because I know his number, but go ahead. Give his number to everybody else.
Okay, he's at 269-637 8327 269-637 8327. Now, if you want to request courtroom observer in your area, you need to call Jeff Hall. His number is 518-382-8282 to request a courtroom observer. That's 518-382-8282. Jeff Ball.
Jan, as you're talking, it sounds like you're getting further and further away. There's some kind of traffic or something. I don't know if you're near an open window or something, but it's kind of like a wind blowing.
a whole pot full
maybe,
of...
Maybe a fan?
I've had a lot of problems with the computer since I got back. I've been on travel for 8 days. Is volume better?
Yeah, just stay close to the mic and we're okay. I just want to add to what you just said, though. Listen, anybody out there, everybody out there that's going to participate, if you're not already communicating with Robert Overhuel, by all means, make that phone call to him tomorrow and let him know, give him your name and number, and let him know that and your email address. Let him know. Well, you don't need to give him the email address because we'll have you listed on the site anyway. But you know, let them know that you're interested in responding and you'll be ready to respond to whatever calls are necessary. This is how we got the pressure going on our earlier cases, which was successful. We have to turn the phones on. We got to get the pressure going. We got to call these people. So please get a hold of Robert. Give Robert's number one more time there, Jen.
Okay, Robert's at 269-637-8327.
Okay, go ahead, John. You got it.
John, I was just looking at your sign-off date on the mandamus, and it turns out to be December 7th. You might want to move it a day. That's Pearl Harbor Day. We don't want to get bombed again.
Well, you know, I found that very interesting that it was the day that lived that lives in infamy, because I thought about that when I figured out we're going to send out next Monday, and I went to look at the date, and I talked with Gerard, and they said, that's an interesting day. Well, hey, it may be the right date to go out on. I don't want to get superstitious, but, you know, it was not chosen because that's what it was. It just fell on that, and I don't want to change it for superstitious reasons. It means it's going to be dated and mailed on that day. They're not going to get it till the 9th or something. But unless you can give me a better reason other than the superstitious reason, I'm not going to change the date. I don't think we should.
Okay. I know you're mailing these to Congress. If they go to the congressman's D.C. address, remember we have the Anthrax Control Center. It takes 2 to 3 weeks to cycle a piece of paper through them so they can x-ray the bejesus out of it to make it safe for our congressman. So if you have a response time of 3 days after mailing, it's going to be a problem.
Well, the only other way we could do this is if we have a contact out in Washington and we can send it out, the whole package, to someone that can hand deliver it. Didn't we do something like that once?
We tried. I don't think it was ever carried out, was it?
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember talking about it. Yeah. But we do have the individual senators and congressmen's name, and I do realize, yeah, they goes through, you know, the x-ray and all that stuff. But I can't believe that it would be held up for weeks, and I'll tell you why. Because it would mean that they're being backlogged. And if they're backlogged for weeks, that backlog would continue to compound, and that compounding would be huge. So I think that they've got to be reasonable within a few days to a week or maybe of additional time to go through the office system, the post office system, and get in. So that might be the case. I don't know. But let's discuss that off air and see what other kind of plans we can do. I do know that we do have all of the physical addresses of every congressman and every senator right now in Washington. We do not have their home address, you know, when I mean their home office address, shall I say. And that, I think, would be a huge task to try to accomplish, and we've never been able to accomplish that before. This year is out anyway. We'd easily go into next year in order to try to accomplish that problem. The other thing, it may be some other way to do this, but the only other way is hand delivery. But even that, it's still going to go through that process. Now, we're only sending envelopes, and they are identifiable on the outside of the envelope. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to go through its basic x-ray system. Look, they're lazy anyway, especially people working for the government. I mean, I know people who work in the post offices, and I can tell you stories that make you cry how much money they waste because they just don't do nothing. And, you know, so they're very lazy, and then they rush to get whatever job they have to get done. And I know that's what happens in the mail departments, and I don't think that they're actually looking at, per se, papers as far as who's it coming from, where it's going. I think it just runs through an x-ray process. I don't know, but we'll talk about it off air, I guess.
Okay, good. We have four speakers tonight. I'd like David Lonier, Stacy Wendell, Ron Flick, and Robert Overhuel to jump into the quay. That's David Lonier, Stacy Wendell, Ron Flick, and Robert Overhill. Please jump into the quay. Great. When I got back at noon today, I only had one person lined up. That was David. Fortunately, three other people volunteered about 20 minutes before the call tonight. It would be nice if these people could call and let me know or email me by Friday noon the week before so that we could get it out into the newsletter so people would be aware of who's going to talk. But we're delighted to have these people tonight anyway, so we'll give them the benefit of the mic. Okay, we'd like to start with David Lonier, who's going to talk about smart meters. He's in Michigan. He's been working on smart meter stuff for some time. I think you're unmuted now, David. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, Gerard.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
I'm okay.
You're good to go.
Oh, okay, great. I just want to thank you, Jan, for asking me to speak tonight. I hope I can impart some information on these on the smart meter issue. I'll just give you a little background. It started back in 2005 with the there was a bill passed by Congress called the U.S. Energy Act of 2005. And that at that time, $4 billion was appropriated by Congress to replace all of the analog meters in the country. These are the electrical meters and gas meters with digital, or what we call smart meters. And in Michigan, $85 million went to one of our power companies. And I'm not sure what went to the other, but we have a monopoly in Michigan. Two power companies. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're fine.
Okay, good. Anyway, they have been installing these smart meters for the last, since, I don't know if they started in 2005, but they have been installing them. And many of us are not too happy with the meters themselves. They have certain properties that were not incorporated into what they call the analog meter. They're quite different. They do not, in most cases, the people who have them on their homes or businesses are not aware that they even have a new meter. The power companies claim that the people love them because they don't complain. Well, the people don't even know they have them. The media won't help us much as far as getting the word out as to the hazards of the meters. So as a result, some of us have put the power companies on notice that we don't want them, and they're forcing us to take them through extortion. If we don't take them, they cut off our power. And I don't know if this is happening in other states, but I presume it probably is. The idea is to get these meters on our home so they can basically spy on us. They're a radio frequency device. They can transmit and receive radio signals. The power company can read your power usage from a remote location. Plus, they can do a whole lot of other things, including turning off your power, controlling your thermostat, controlling the appliances in your home. If they're smart appliances, they can collect information as to what appliances you have, what time they're on, whether you're home or not. There are a number of things that they can do that are basically a violation of our Fourth Amendment right. There are many laws in Michigan that in Michigan, it's a felony to install a surveillance device on private property without the explicit consent of the owner, yet they're doing it. Federal code prevents installation of surveillance devices. There are many, many issues besides the Fourth Amendment. Precautionary principle says that when devices may cause injury to people, which these smart meters do. They're not allowed to put them on. Michigan Consumer Protection Act protects us from installing replacement parts or devices that are not needed. The analog meters have been around for about 100 years. They don't use any electrical power. All they do is measure the current flow through the meter. So if there's ever a surge coming into your meter, it simply goes through the meter. The meter itself does not affect the meter in any way. The old analog meters have never been known to explode or cause fires. The new meters are quite different. They're what they call a front load, or what they do is the power that comes into them is transmitted from 240 volts AC to 12 volts DC, and then the rest of the current, or the current after that, is sent into your home. It's called dirty electricity, and it's very harmful to our biological organisms. The radio frequency that they transmit out to collect information and to transmit information to the meter is also very harmful. It causes DNA damage. The World Health Organization has listed it as a class 2B carcinogen, which is the same frequency, or it's got a microwave frequency. It comes off smart meter. Your cell phones, any wireless technology uses these frequencies, these microwave frequencies that are carcinogenic. They cause cancer and DNA damage. But with your cell phone or your home's phone or whatever you're using, you can turn it off. It's not going 24/7. The problem with the smart meters is they are being used 24/7. As a result, they're very dangerous, and we have had no luck at all in getting the courts to hear our pleas to have a choice. All we're asking for is a choice to not have them on our homes and businesses. We now have a bill in our state house. We're hoping to get that passed, but we're having a lot of resistance. The power companies have 70 lobbyists working in our state and our state legislators to get their way and to prevent us from getting these bills passed that would help us get a choice. So that's pretty much where we are. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Well, I have a question. First of all, what business does the government have to give the power companies money to put meters in? Only because the government wants to help spy on us with the NSA. That whole business is shady right there. The fact that they're using our tax dollars to put these meters on the house. I mean, if the power companies are so comfortable with the government, and the government's so comfortable with the power companies, I think that we should be receiving free electricity in that case, since this comes from the taxpayers' money that's funding them.
Correct.
So, if they want to give us free electricity, then we'll talk about their smart meters, you know?
Well, we have evidence to show that they will actually make more money from the sale of the information they collect from the meters than they will from the sale of the electricity.
There you go. That's the whole. Now you just hit the nail on the head. That's the whole business of this. And so maybe that's the point that we should be driving home. Look, we have the NSA spying on us. Our government is treating us like we're the animal in the cage. You know what I mean? And they're experimenting on the people. So I thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Okay. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
We appreciate that. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
You take care.
Good
night. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, I just wanted to say something before we get going with all the speakers and the questions. I had something I wanted to present. We kind of went a little long. I just want to go over something pretty quickly as far as, you know, what NLA is doing and where we are with these habeas corpuses. Like John mentioned, that, you know, we have people that are in the courts whose papers have ripened now. And we're just about at the point where we're going to have to do indictments. So, some people say, well, what are they doing? They're ignoring our paperwork. They're putting them in miscellaneous files, and that type, which is a game that they've been playing. However, look at, we've had some victories, and you know, they were, when they throw the person out of court, we consider that a victory, and they do it out of fear. Now, on one particular one, I know for a fact that they put the default in miscellaneous file, but the habeas corpus was not filed, and when we asked where it was, they said, well, it was still in process. Well, what does that mean? Well, it's in the judge's chambers. So what that tells me is that he doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't want to file it. He doesn't want to return it. Obviously, he's read it. Obviously, they're worried. They're waiting for us. And right now, we cannot fall down on the us because they're waiting for our next step. And we have a next step. Some of it seems slow. People want to complain we're not doing enough. And look, there is a process here that has to go through, that has to mature. However, while that process is going, because they're receiving paper after paper, and we're bringing it further and wider, you know, this next paper is going out to Congress. When everybody's notified, then there's no excuse. I have a couple of ideas of how I want to accomplish that. For one thing, we need to come together as a point of a spear. Everybody that has a habeas corpus in there, you're on the back. The point of the spear is probably the 10 cases we have in right now. Those are the point. Everybody needs to push on that spear because your cases are all on the back of that spear. Once we knock the first one over, that's what's going to push the next ones through. This is a true domino theory in my mind. So what is that going to take? You got a judge ready to throw people in jail. You got judges that are going to allow the houses to be taken. Now, the paperwork speaks in, you know, we speak with authority, and we speak in plain language. They know what our language says. They're not used to being talked to like this. But the thing that puts the icing on the cake for them is when the people push back and they do it in force, whether that be phone calls, whether it be showing up at the court, our courtroom watchers, the call-outs, very, very important. Now, I suggest that we take, and we have very, very provocative cases, very sad cases when they're read, you know, what they're doing to the people, case after case. I suggest that we get the permission of some of these people and we make their cases public and we post them and we send them to Congress and we send them to all the judges and we say, look, these are the cases that National Liberty Alliance is working on right now. This is the issues. There are indictments pending, and you elected officials, you have no excuse now, you know. And then it's up to us to make the phone calls and to show up because that's what they understand. And the same thing with the sheriffs. You know, we need law enforcement here. If we had enough people showing up and pushing on law enforcement, they would feel more comfortable about upholding the law. Right now, we need those papers filed in the federal court. Once they're filed in the federal court, guess what? The state court will fold. The federal court right now is doing felony rescue by not filing the papers or by filing them in miscellaneous files, which essentially, you know, what's a miscellaneous file in your computer? It's where stuff goes that you don't know what to do with, but basically it's junk. It never gets read. So we have to address that. We have to get a hold of that judge or his clerk or the judge and the clerk and the clerk of the court, the county clerk, and we have to start calling and say, look, you got these papers you didn't file. You're requiring fees, and you know that you can't sell justice. Mention some of the cases that we have written down in our documentation that they're not allowed to sell justice, and keep calling them. And everybody should call, and they'll get calls from different phones. That's what's going to put more of the fear in. And actually, that was part of the fear in the Dean case, besides the fact that we were new and they didn't really know what to do. You got to understand, they're hiding felonies. They're hiding RICO. When the people come in and start shining a light, pretty soon the judge no longer has a stomach for what's going on. You know, and I know, the corruptions in those courts. And it doesn't look like the federal court's any better than the state court, really, as far as corruption goes. The only difference is the federal courts are a little more sophisticated. They know the law better. The guys on the bottom, they're useful idiots. They're making money. They're doing it for the reasons they're doing it for. But I don't know if they actually understand the total implications of what they're doing and why they shouldn't be doing it. I think more federal judges understand the Constitution and the violations that they're pushing forward there. So look, it's up to every National Liberty Alliance member to come to the point of this spear. These 10 cases have to, they're in the court now. We have to address those judges. When it comes your turn, once we push that spear under the chink and lift the armor up, we're going to be able to run in. There will be no resistance. So everybody that has a case that feels depressed because they're on the back of the list, you're really not on the back of the list. You could be making phone calls to the guy in the front of the spear. We have to operate as a force of one, and this is the way that I see us doing it. Let's get these cases in the public. Let's let the judges say, yeah, I don't care, you know, that this elderly person is going to lose their house or I'm going to put them in jail. Let them tell it to all the people. We'll post those cases, and we'll post the results of those cases, and then we'll see how they like that. And I think that's going to be a very powerful thing. Look, we have over 4,500 members. If we could engage those members to make phone calls, write letters, and travel to the courtrooms, you'd be surprised what you could do, because they understand that. They understand when somebody shows up, that represents 100 people when one person shows up. So make no mistake about it, and don't just think about yourself, because really you are thinking about yourself, because the cases that we spent the time and got the information and filed the affidavits, it's a lot of work putting the case in court. It's not about $60 for mailing. If you want to go in a federal court and go get a lawyer, it's a $30,000 retainer to even talk to a federal lawyer. So the work that we're doing here is of immense value, and we're giving it away free, and 99.9% of the people that are getting this couldn't afford a federal court lawyer. So just remember that. I mean, this is part of the value of being a member of National Liberty Alliance, that we're going to go to the bat for you, up to the plate. So when it comes time to make the phone calls, or even when it comes time to travel and get in the car, even if it takes you 3 hours, look at some of these cases are so important. Read them yourself. You'll travel overnight to get there just to support these people. You know, the only reason this stuff is happening is because the average person sitting in front of their television watching their stupid shows doesn't hear about it. It's got to be up to us to get it out there. And we got two or three cases right now on Wednesday that we're going to put a call out for. And I'm imploring everybody that let's start with these three cases and let's bring the other 8 or 9 into it. Let's get their permission and publish it. This is a new idea I'm throwing out here, people. Not everybody has heard this, because I think that we need this action step to show the judges and the legislators and the prosecutors that we're serious and we're the people. When they start seeing the people come, that's what's going to unnerve them, because that's what this country is about. The people inaugurated this government. Of the people, by the people, for the people. The trouble is the people have been asleep. So it's time to wake up, get to those courts, make those phone calls, and we're going to have action things for everybody to do. Probably even on a weekly basis, we're going to make a list of where the calls need to be, where the people need to be, and we're going to start assembling them and empowering them and amassing them in the right places, like the point of a spear. And everybody has to be behind that spear, because that's the thrust that's going to push it into their armor. The fact that we have a group that is going to become a force of one, and everybody's case is important to everybody else, and we're all behind each other. United we stand. It's that much more push. So I'm going to get off it. I don't have all the particulars, but stay tuned, because there'll be messages going out on how we're going to implement this in order to keep people active and working towards freedom, because that's what we're about. If we're not working towards freedom, what are we doing? And I mean, you can't just have you know, one person writing papers and one person licking stamps. We all have to be in on this. And look at that, paper's for all of us. We all need to be downloading them and printing them and sending them out and putting them up on our placards and walking into the courts with them. We have to become active and a little bit radical, too. Don't be afraid. That's what we have to do. Everything that was ever won in this country, it cost people time, money, blood, sweat, tears. Read the cases. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the cases. They need to be made public, and you people need to get behind them, because those cases, you're next, and I'm next. Your families are next. Your mothers and your brothers, your sisters, your brothers, your mothers, your fathers, they're running rampant over this nation, and we're letting them by our inaction. Now, we're going to give you actions to do, and they're going to be very easy. Most of them will be easy. Making a call, mailing a letter, getting on the phones and getting in touch with these people, relay calling so they get inundated with calls. That's what works. Don't be lazy, don't despair, because that's what this is about, that the power of many. All right, I'm going to get off it, but stay tuned, because we have new things going in order to animate this group and to give it life in the eyes of our officials, and we're going to show them. If they think that we're fooling around, we're going to show them. We're going to show them in such a way, it's going to be terrifying to them, because they don't believe that we're alive and well out here, and they're going to wake up very soon. Thank you. Okay, we have Michigan Robert. I'm going to open up you, and you can go ahead. Are you Robert?
Robert Overhill.
Yes. Robert.
Kind of does. No, not really. Go along with what Drive just mentioned. On the papers, on these cases, you know, I was talking with the secretary earlier, too. Another place would be you know, in the grocery stores and stuff like that. They all got bulletin boards. Put them up there. You know, after all, we're here for the public, and we're created, our government's created by us, we the people, the public. So, what better place to post? Another thing that I started doing that will bring it forward would be, if I get any static from a judge or somebody, I just simply walk over to the register's office, and I register everything I have. That makes it halfway a legal document, even though it's not a sworn affidavit. But you now have material that is registered that can be used in court. They might not want to see it, but it's there. And, you know, I haven't got too much more to say. That's about it. But we will be bringing forth the Sheriff's Committee, hopefully, this coming Thursday at 8:30 or 9 o'clock, probably 9 o'clock. We might have to once in a while change the time from 8:30 or from 9 to 8:30. A couple of people we might have to do for accommodation. And we can work around that. Well, yeah, that's tentative. I'll begin with Gary and getting things lined up on that. And I yield. That's all.
Okay. Robert, the news that the information I got was that it was going to start at 9 o'clock, and I have the access number, or access code, and the phone number in the weekly newsletter number 5. If you didn't receive a copy, you can go to the National Liberty Alliance website under news and read the newsletter and get the times and dates. If it changes, I guess people should just check about 8:30 to make sure it hasn't started. I don't know any easy way to do it. I think, did you say that you wanted just the Sheriff's Committee on Thursday night for this first meeting, or everybody invited?
Everybody can come in, but be mainly held to the Sheriff's Committee.
Okay, good. We had, Gerard, we had Stacy that wanted to talk about 2030. I see that he's in the quay here. Do you want to just unmute him? Other people jump in front of him.
Let me see if I can find him here.
I've got him in the quay. He's the third one down.
The third one down, I have Washington and Arlene.
Next one.
Arkansas, Stacy. Okay, I'll unmute him now. Okay, Stacy. Hello. How you doing?
Good. I had actually put myself into the queue to make a comment on the previous discussion. Just a real quick discussion on that. The meters, the smart meters that are being installed. Mm-hmm. There's also another agenda for those as well. Is anybody, I don't know if anybody's aware of the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is a new technology that is actually being propelled around the world right now. There's large conferences going on worldwide. They're all positioning as to who's going to be able to do what, and you know, underwriter laboratories and things of that nature. But what the smart meter does and why they want them on every house is because what they're going to do is they're going to be able to read your refrigerator. The barcodes of everything that goes into your refrigerator is going to be read as it's put in and as it's taken out. Okay, it's going to be able to shut on and off your air conditioner, your washer and dryer. When your packaging is done out of your refrigerator and you take it out to your recycle bin or to your garbage can, your garbage can is actually going to register that it's in the garbage now. And what that does is it gives them a more of a system to be able to put products on the shelves and to monitor what everybody's got. So that's another aspect of what they're doing with these smart meters. And you won't hear a lot about it unless you actually investigate the Internet of Things. Everything that is going to be in your house as far as an appliance goes in the coming years is going to be able to be read and operated by that smart meter. They'll know when you're washing clothes. They'll know, and they will actually adjust your rates. If you're doing your laundry at peak times, they're going to send you a notice as a warning, and they're going to say you need to do this in the evening hours, early morning hours, blah, blah, blah. So that was the one thing that I did want to impart on that, okay? Number two is I would like to also state about what Gerard was talking about, the volunteer aspect. I implore people to please volunteer because, you know, the wagon's getting heavy, but the more people get out and get behind it and push it, the better. You know, and everybody should be trying to get more members involved. Everybody's got family members that can help, even if they're not members. You know, everybody needs to be doing something. Everybody's got 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes to devote. So that's my two cents on that.
And absolutely, look at they don't have to be a member to do a call out. Hey, call this judge. Here's the skit. Here's what's going on. You know, we have stories they could make movies out of. My goodness, you know, if you want to get behind something, but just call and say, look, I hear that such and such is going to be there today, and I want the judge to know that this is how I feel, and he better do the right thing because the people are watching or whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of people, there is the common thought process that has been perpetuated for decades now that, you know, our duty as a citizen is to vote. It's our right to vote. It's not our duty to vote. Our duty is to protect what we have, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, all of those things, by keeping our thumb on what our senators, our representatives are doing in our name. It is our responsibility to be involved. More people need to get involved instead of watching American Idol or Honey Boo Boo or whatever they're doing. You know, instead of raking those leaves in the yard, go and spend 15 minutes at a city council meeting. We need to get more involved in what's going on, because if we don't, they're going to continue to run all over us, and we're never going to get anything accomplished.
There was a saying that by one of the forefathers, I don't remember who, something to the effect that those who refuse to get into politics, I think he said politics, are destined to be run by their inferiors who do. And that's what's happening. Yeah. You've got a minority of the people that will get up off their butts and go out there, and they end up becoming your politicians because they put the time in. I mean, go like you said, go to your city councils and find out who's putting in this international property code, which is a horrible thing, which is treasonous because it's coming from a foreign corporation through the UN,
and your
town supervisors, by signing on to it, are committing treason. They're not supposed to contract with a foreign organization, and that's what it is. And what business do they have of adopting an international property code? What the hell is that all about?
That's, you know, all part of what I'm going to be discussing tonight as well with the 2030 agreement.
Exactly. It's all, look, yes, the government never, like, they collect information and they use it. They use it against you. They make money on it. They sell it. They don't care. They're like the big whore out there, you know, the whore of Babylon. They don't care who they give it to and why, and they're obsessed with getting it. And it's what they do now. And we need to put them back into a box where they belong. So anyway,
here.
I'm going to go ahead and
do you want to
move
do
on here.
2030 agenda now, Stacy?
Yes, sir. Okay, I'm going to go under the pretense that most on this phone call are not aware of what the 2030 agenda is or that it's even been signed. During the UN summit at the end of September of this year, I believe it was the 25th to the 27th, when the Pope came and had the most members ever show up, I believe it was 170 or so leaders of countries came in, and the purpose for that and the reason it was such a big deal was because it was the signing of the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda, where all of these countries were signing on. Okay, now what this is, and I know I'm going to bring up some connotations here, but it is the New World Order. Please don't shut down because I say that, but it is the New World Order. What they are doing is they are taking nations and they are turning them into states. And turning the United Nations in from being a peacekeeping and international body of you know, making sure, you know, this country isn't overrunning and violating human rights and things of that nature, and they're turning them into a governmental body. Now, anybody who's aware of what international law is, you know, if 6 months ago you would have looked up international law, it would have said a body of laws, rules, regulations, policies that regulate the interactions between nations, and that there was no enforcement body per se that could actually enforce it, and that's why they started an international court, so that they can actually, so the grievances between nations could actually be heard. Well, now if you look on Wikipedia, they've changed the definition of international law to where it now has three different meanings, and I'm not going to get all into that right now because it's just, I'll be here all night with it. But what the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda is it is basically a treaty. It's a charter through all these, I believe it's 170 countries that have come together to allow the UN to be over them as a governing body and to enforce an international body of law within the boundaries of these countries. Most people don't even know that this thing was signed. You know, there was a lot of noise going on about September. You know, the earthquakes were coming and you know, Jesus was going to come back, and they knew, and there was going to be a tidal wave and volcano and all of these things. All that was noise to cover up what I believe is pure treason. In this document, it's readily available online. You can just look it up, 2030 Sustainable Development Agreement, and you can read it for yourself. I'm going to go over a little bit of it now, okay? But I just want everybody to realize that this is a treasonous document. They word it in ways that keep them from actually committing treason. And the other way that they've broke the agenda down into so many different private organizations that you never get the full picture. I've been on this for about 6, 7, 8 months now, and I'm telling you, I thought I was going to go nuts just trying to hunt this whole thing down. And it's actually how I became aware of the 2030 agenda, by tracking it down through the back doors. So anyway, the 2030 agenda, I'm going to read the preamble real quick. This agenda is a plan of action for people, planet, and prosperity. It also seeks to strengthen universal peace in larger freedom. We recognize that eradicating poverty, and this is something that they use, just so you know, don't listen to the foo-foo language, okay? We recognize that eradicating poverty in all its forms and dimensions, including extreme poverty, is the greatest global challenge and an indispensable requirement for sustainable development. All countries and all stakeholders acting in collaborative partnership will implement this plan. We are resolved to free the human race from the tyranny of poverty and want, and to heal and secure our planet. We are determined to take the bold and transformative steps which are urgently needed to shift the world onto a sustainable and resilient path. As we embark on this collective journey, we pledge that no one will be left behind. The 17 Sustainable Development Goals and 169 targets, which we are announcing today, demonstrate the scale and ambition of this new universal agenda. They seek to build on the Millennium Development Goals, which is, if in case anybody's wondering, it is the Agenda 21. I'm sure everybody's heard of that. And complete what these did not achieve. They seek to realize the human rights of all and to achieve gender equality and the empowerment of all women and girls. They are integrated and indivisible and balance the three dimensions of sustainable development, the economic, social, and environmental. The goals and targets will stimulate action over the next 15 years in areas of critical importance for humanity and the planet. People, we are determined to end poverty and hunger in all their forms and dimensions and to ensure that all human beings can fulfill their potential in dignity and equality and in a healthy environment. Planet, we are determined to protect the planet from degradation, including through sustainable consumption and production, sustainably managing its natural resources, and taking urgent action on climate change so that it can support the needs of the present and future generations. Prosperity, we are determined to ensure that all human beings can enjoy prosperous and fulfilling lives and that economic, social, and technological progress occurs in harmony with nature. Peace, we are determined to foster peaceful, just, and inclusive societies which are free from fear and violence. There can be no sustainable development without peace, and no peace without sustainable development. Now, that's an important statement right there, okay? I just want everybody to hear that, and so I'm going to say it again. There can be no sustainable development without peace, and no peace without sustainable development. Partnership. We are determined to mobilize the means required to implement this agenda through a revitalized global partnership for sustainable development based on a spirit of strengthened global solidarity focused in particular on the needs of the poorest and most vulnerable and with the participation of all countries, all stakeholders, and all people. The interlinkages and integrated nature of the Sustainable Development Goals are of crucial importance in ensuring that the purpose of the new agenda is realized. If we realize our ambitions across the full extent of the agenda, the lives of all will be profoundly improved and our world will be transformed for the better. Now, here's their declaration. We, the heads of state and government and high representatives meeting at the United Nations headquarters in New York from 25 to 27 September 2015, as the organization celebrates its 70th anniversary, have decided today on new global sustainable development goals. On behalf of the people we serve, we have adopted a historic decision on a comprehensive, far-reaching, and people-centered set of universal and transformative goals and targets. We commit ourselves to working tirelessly tirelessly for the full implementation of this agenda by 2030. We recognize that eradicating poverty in all its forms and dimensions, including extreme poverty, is the greatest global challenge and an indispensable requirement for sustainable development. We are committed to achieving sustainable development in its three dimensions, economic, social, and environmental, in a balanced and an integrated manner. We will also build upon the achievements of the Millennium Development Goals, Agenda 21, and seek to address their unfinished business. We resolve between now and 2030 to end poverty and hunger everywhere, to combat inequalities within and among countries, to build peaceful, just, and inclusive societies. You hear that? To build peaceful, just, and inclusive societies, to protect human rights, which they're not talking about our human rights, they're talking about a new one, and we'll get to that, and promote gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls, and to ensure the lasting protection of the planet and its natural resources. We resolve also to create conditions for sustainable, inclusive, and sustained economic growth, shared prosperity, and decent work for all, taking into account different levels of national development and capacities. As we embark on the great collective journey, we pledge that no one will be left behind. Recognizing that the dignity of the human person is fundamental, we wish to see the goals and targets met for all nations and peoples and for all segments of society. And we will endeavor to reach the furthest behind first. This is an agenda of unprecedented scope and significance. It is accepted by all countries and is applicable to all, taking into account different national realities, capacities, and levels of development, and respecting national policies and priorities. Now, they go on later on to say how they're going to make sure that they are involved in getting national policies and priorities in line with the international agenda. These are universal goals and targets which involve the entire world, developed and undeveloping countries alike. They are integrated and indivisible and balance the three dimensions of sustainable development. The goals and targets are the result, and I'm going to skip over this. In these goals and targets, we are setting out a supremely ambitious transformative vision. Okay. We envisage a world in which every country enjoys sustained inclusive and sustainable economic growth and decent work for all, a world in which consumption and production patterns and use of all natural resources, from air to land, from rivers, lakes, and aquifers to oceans and seas, are sustainable. Now, I'm going to stop right there for a second and just let you know that what they're saying there is they are about to take control of every source of water. That right there is against our Constitution because the states retain most of those rights. Okay. One in which democracy, good governance, and the rule of law, as well as an enabling environment at national and international levels, are essential for sustainable development, including sustainable and inclusive economic growth, social development, environmental protection, and the eradication of poverty and hunger. One in which development and the application of technology are climate sensitive, respect biodiversity, and are resilient. One in which humanity lives in harmony with nature, and in which wildlife and other living species are protected. Our shared principles and commitments. The new agenda is guided by the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations, including full respect for international law. Notice here that they say nothing of respecting national laws. It is grounded in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, international human rights treaties, the Millennium Declaration, and the 2005 World Summit Outcome Document. It is informed by other instruments, such as the Declaration on the Right to Development. Okay, now I'm going to stop there for a second again and just let everybody know here that's listening that what they are saying is that they are going to be integrally involved in development, the way you develop socially, the way our societies develop, They are going to be integrally involved in every aspect of our lives, including mental health. And I have many other documents. I have a mountain of documents from the UN and from all of their conferences around the world that outline everything from taking over our taxes in the United States to make sure that we are paying our fair share, to make sure that every person in every underdeveloped country has electricity, health care, education, food, and housing. So in other words, our tax dollars will now be going to the world to make sure that every citizen has food, water, clean water, electricity, just everything that you and I enjoy as our daily life. We reaffirm our outcomes of all major UN conferences and summits, which have laid a solid foundation for sustainable development. These include the Rio Declaration of Environment and Development, the World Summit on Sustainable Development, the World Summit for Social Development, the Program of Action of the International Conference on Population and Development, the Beijing Platform for Action, and the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development. We also reaffirm the follow-up to these conferences, including the outcomes of the 4th United Nations Conference on the Least Developed Countries, the outcomes of the 4th United Nations Conference on the Least Developed Countries, the 3rd International, blah, 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 blah. We reaffirm the principles of the Rio Declaration. Okay, now, the challenges and commitments contained in these major conferences and summits are interrelated and call for integrated solutions. To address them effectively, a new approach is needed. Sustainable development recognizes that eradicating poverty in all its forms and dimensions, combating inequality within and among countries, preserving the planet, creating sustained, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth, and fostering social inclusion are linked to each other and are interdependent. Now I'm going to move on a little bit here. Okay, almost 15 years ago, the Millennium Development Goals were agreed. President Bush and Congress passed this in 2004, and it was named the Millennium Challenge Corporation. Okay, now this was passed by Congress. And it was set and it was passed with the understanding it was going to sit on the shelf until 2009. Okay, now to me that's suspicious because that means the administration is going to be out of office and a new one is going to be in. And as soon as Barack Obama came into office, he grabbed up the Millennium Challenge Corporation and he created this whole thing of inner city youth through the Millennium Challenge. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. Okay, These provided an important framework for development, and significant progress has been made in a number of areas. Okay, we recommit ourselves to the full realization of all the MDGs, in particular by providing focused and scaled-up assistance to least developed countries and other countries in special situations in line with relevant support programs. The new agenda builds on the Millennium Development Goals and seeks to complete what these did not achieve. The framework we are announcing today goes far beyond the MDGs. It also crucially defines means of implementation, reflecting the integrated approach that we have decided on. Never before have world leaders pledged common action and endeavor. We reaffirm our commitment to international law. Notice here, right after they gave a hollow promise of each state to have sovereignty over these items, they reaffirm their commitment to international law and having them guided by it. We emphasize that the agenda is to be implemented in a manner that is consistent with the rights and obligations of states under international law. We reaffirm the importance of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as well as other international instruments relating to human rights and international law. And again, they reemphasize the Declaration of International Law. We emphasize the responsibility of all states in conformity with the Charter of the United Nations. All forms of discrimination and violence will be eliminated.
Can I interrupt you here for a minute?
You can. I've had to go on, but it's hard to.
Yeah,
it's hard to really.
Working on this forever. They even mentioned the fact that Agenda 21 did not has goals unfinished, and the reason that they're unfinished.
Correct.
is because there was education going on and people understood that sustainable development meant Agenda 21, meant they had to give up their property rights. So this is, look, this is just their words in a pipe dream of what they would like to do. I don't care what it says in there, it ain't happening. And I'm going to tell you why it ain't happening. It ain't happening because as we go through, as National Liberty Alliance, getting back into the court and the common law grand jury, one of the natural things that's going to happen here is we're going to be out of the UN. That's all we got to do. All this stuff, I don't care what they say or what they claim. It doesn't matter. I don't even want to study their crap because that's what it is. It's all crap. And it doesn't matter who they're talking to or who signs this. America is the one they need to get on. And if they can't, one of the things, if they can't get us on this, then they have to kill us so they can get the rest of the world on.
Which is what the next thing that I was going to bring up does, okay? It says that the new goals and targets will come into effect 1 January 2016. And it goes on to say that they will be bringing in international forces to enforce these rules and regulations.
Good.
And the commitments contained within.
So they do,
and I don't know if anybody here is familiar with these. The Department of Justice just announced, and they also announced it at this UN summit, that they are now, the United States is now a part of the Strong Cities Network. The Strong Cities Network is based out of Oslo, Norway, and what it is, and let me see, the cities that are involved right now are Denver, New York, Atlanta, I think it's Minneapolis, and a couple of others. There's five or six that are already signed on. They are bringing international troops and international foreign people who are not civilians of the United States. They're not citizens. And they will be working with our local police departments and to enforce the international law. Now, it also goes on to say about the Rome Declaration, wealth is shared and income equality is obliterated. They commit to making fundamental changes on societies, the way they produce and consume goods. They are going to restrict travel. Migrants,
Instead of looking at them with a microscope and looking at what they claim they're going to do, we understand the evil of this and what it's going to do. The answer is what it has always been and where we've had our success is on the local level. You tell your local people, your local towns, do not put this international property code in, number one. That's how they started. They should not be adopting that. And the people should be going to their town boards and their town supervisors and mayors and whoever they are and telling them, look, if you implement this, you're committing treason, and we, the people, are going to come after you. We're going to prosecute you. Whatever we have to do, we're going to vote you out.
Unfortunately, there are hundreds of cities who have already adopted the plan through the Agenda 21 movement, okay? They were selling it on, you know, we're going to make sure that there's still greenways and the water stays clean and the air is clean, and that's the way they're selling it. But what they don't put out there is that, and they're already building the units in California. They are going to move people into 500 square foot units, and that's where you live. And they will tell you when and where you can live. They're erratic.
Well,
they're eliminating property rights.
There's only one answer for this, and that is what we're doing in the courts. And I mean, look at if they're going to bring foreign troops in to enforce this, and they're telling us that. I heard that the militias were put on high alert, whatever that means. Well, the militias need to be on high alert for foreign troops. If they got foreign troops enforcing local ordinances and local police, that's why you should be talking to your local police, and you tell them if the militia sees you cavorting with foreign troops, you and the foreign troops will both get a bullet in the head. End of story. Because this is treason and subversion, and we don't need to talk about it. We don't need to study it. All we need to do is get rid of it. And the way you get rid of it is you never let them implement it locally. They can't put their foot down if they can't stand in your town and look at people. You can take your town back. Everybody's fed up. You need to go. You need to get involved. And the people that are running your townships, most of them are mental midgets, and they think that they got to tell everybody what to do with their money, and they got nothing better to do. And usually, you know, they're the pretty police. They're going to tell everybody, you know, how things should be and how things should go and all this baloney, which is a fallacy. None of this stuff works. The market needs to determine what goes where. You can't have a bunch of people sitting on a board playing God, because that doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. Ask Russia if it works, because Russia had these visions too, and they were going to control the economy and control this and control that, and all they did was ruin it. And so their economy went down because of things like this that you're seeing.
The last thing that I will say on this is two different things, okay? One, the military is already instructed, and for about 3 years now, they have been instructed to reorganize and to be part of a I have another document here. I've been doing a lot of research on this, okay? But they are already, it's a strategic security force made up of international forces that will be operating within the continental United States. This thing authorizes our military to enforce this policy. And I've got document after document directly from the military where they are already integrating. They have already integrated their equipment with all the other countries, and they've already shipped them out. They've already received it, because every country, they have different gas requirements, different oil requirements, different repair part requirements, and they've integrated every nation's equipment to operate off of one basic guideline. Okay, and this thing is called Joint Force Development. It is called the Force 2025 Land Power. Okay, so they have already got our military on standby and already developed through policies to implement and to operate in our country as a police force.
Well, that's what Jade Helm was all about. It's an app.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
But look,
yes,
we gotta move on, because I got some other things to take on. This needs to go into a committee where you can pull this stuff together and give us some written material that people can read and research. Because the most important thing for people here tonight and in their towns is you have to know the buzzwords. You have to know the things that they say to make it sound all warm and fuzzy. And the minute you do that, you know they're implementing it, and then you have to get a bunch of people the same way that we're going to go into the courts. You do the same thing in your town boards. I mean, it's a lot of activism that has to go on, but look at it. It's your town, and towns are usually run by five people. If they don't have a mayor, it's, you know, it's a board, a supervisor, and council people, and they have that town council has the power of the state legislator. So what you got to do is you got to get them to make resolutions condemning this stuff before they ever come in. When Agenda 21 comes in, you have the resolutions that you push through the board. You make them uncomfortable politically. You make it known in no uncertain terms what's going on. You do the resolutions. When they come in, it's very easy at that point to say, oh no, we've already made the town boards have already made a resolution. A matter of fact, if you get some active people, you can run that resolution through your whole state from county to county and town to town. What you do is you go to them, and every time you get a town to sign on, you let them sign the thing, and you bring it to the next town, and you say, look, at these seven towns that have signed this resolution against this Agenda 21, you know, global governance that's going to take away our control of our town. And so you push it through the towns. That way, they're already behind the eight ball when they get there. And look, we had some very good, very, very good victories with Agenda 21. They're looking to revamp it and change. Look, they tacked it onto this thing because they gave up. It didn't work. So now they added it to this to try to finish implementing it, you know? And look,
yes,
I want to tell you another thing.
What,
not
okay.
everything that they're talking about is bad. I mean,
I agree.
I was on the town board, and there were certain things in certain ways, and I said, look, it, this is a good thing. I said, but you know what? This is nothing special. These are ideas that came during the medieval days when you had the blacksmith on. They talk about a town where you can walk to everything and you got this
yes.
available and that available. Well, these are not new ideas. These are old ideas, okay? And you can implement that if you want as a town, and that doesn't infringe on anybody's liberties, but the rest of the stuff does. But I
yes,
want to move forward. We got a lot of people that have things to talk about, and I really
okay.
appreciate what you brought out here tonight. And you need to now bring it to us in a way that somebody on a committee can get a hold of it, post some of this stuff, because we could definitely post it, and whoever wants to pick it up for their community. I mean, look, if we can get a community that will run with this and do like a model for other people to follow, that would be a good thing. And
yes.
be creative, because, you know, look, you can't fight them in the courts, because look at what they're doing. You got an international body that the president signed. How do you fight that? You fight it on the level.
Exactly.
That's how you fight.
Yes. I do have
Barack Obama and get any results.
I do have one last thing that I would like to say, though, is that I would like to see, because the thing about presumptive law, with this thing going into effect 1/1/2016, I would like to see some sort of a letter drawn up to where it gets sent to the president and Congress and whatnot, saying that we, the people, object to this being placed upon us, especially without a vote of some sort. We're not even aware that it's happening.
Well, not even without a vote. The fact of the matter is you can't vote on treason. The vote is
right. I'm just saying that they're going to do it.
Well, they need to cease and desist. Look, they're telling us they're going to have foreign troops come in. As far as I'm concerned, when the militia hears that, they better be wiping the Cosmoline off their guns. Let's go. Those are fighting words, and I don't mind saying it, because you put foreign troops here to enforce an international law. Guess what? Don't come to my house. Don't come.
I have my finger on the pulse of what's going on there, and they are already aware, and they are already polishing their guns. So I know that this is already occurring.
Well, you look, they're making big mistakes, because they really don't know where the rubber meets the road. Look, at these guys are schizophrenic dreamers too. So their biggest problem is they're going to push too fast and too hard. They don't have, you know, you think we're impatient, they're impatient. They've been trying this for over 100 years, and they're so close now they can taste it, and that's why
mm-hmm.
they're going to lose it. Anyway, I'm sorry I'm going to have to cut you off, because they got...
No. That's about all I had to say. That was
okay.
about all I had to say. I shared what I had to say.
Okay, thank you. And that was, what is it, Stacy from Arkansas?
Yes.
That, okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Flick had a five-minute thing he wanted to add, if that's okay. If he's in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I have to find him. Let me see. I'll get...
He's a 501 area code, but I don't see him in the list. Try *6, Ron, if you're there, to unmute.
*6 or *6 and then 1.
I don't know if he has to get in the quay, if he just wants to talk.
He says he's in the queue.
He is.
He
501. No, that's not him.
Where's your name at, Ron?
Ron Fleck.
It might be under anonymous. I don't know. See, we might not have his name.
Or VOIP dialer. There's some there. That
oh, here he is. I got him. That's what he is, VOIP dialer.
Now you can hear me.
There you go. You're on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I got something here. Okay. I appreciate everybody's input there, and particularly Stacy bringing that out. My main concern in bringing this thing out was the January 1/16 date, the fact that that's when this thing goes into effect under presumptive law, that they're not getting any feedback from us at the local level. We don't consent. And my thoughts were that we have to really stress on getting the research for the mayors underway and out of the way first, and address this paperwork, if we want to do a paperwork, to the mayors before Christmas break. That was my feeling. But my main thrust is to get the paperwork done that JP is trying desperately to organize, and is not getting a lot of input. He had a lot of input initially, and we kind of fallen away from the actual thrust going forward. We have about 21 states that have between 4 and 8 issues that aren't being addressed, and there's nobody doing the addressing. And
so there's 21 states missing, is what you're saying? Have information.
Yeah, if you go, everybody goes to the directory and scroll down to the elected officials status page.
Right.
That brings up the chart that JP organized.
Yeah.
And it shows, if you scroll all the way to the left, right-hand side, you see it's 165 or 167 issues there that is not being addressed and needs to be addressed. And
okay, so this is an action thing that we're calling out for tonight.
Exactly.
To get these things filled so that, look it, we can send paperwork to the mayor.
Exactly.
And say, don't.
Exactly. Exactly. What we did with the governors, we want to do with the mayors.
Right.
And my suggestion was to go.
Well,
to
there might be an easier way to do this. And you know, if we think about doing things with mayors or with council people, and you think about the towns and the cities. I mean, in New York State alone, we've got over 950 towns and villages, and then we have 62 or 63 cities, and that's in New York State. Now, when you think about the hugeness of that, each state, if each state was 1,000, I mean, you're talking 50,000 papers, and that would be almost near an impossibility. And then the papers would be, we wouldn't want to put a paper too short. But you know what? I think this is the responsibility of the governor. He's the one that's supposed to make sure that the Constitution is being adhered to all individuals within his state. And so if they're mayors or whoever they are, they need to adhere to it. So we need to develop a strategy to go to the, and there's only 50 of them, and put the weight on to the governor to deal with this problem.
Well, John,
that's probably the way to go.
I was mainly thinking if we just did the county seat mayors. And like in Arkansas, you have 75, Iowa has 99, Missouri has 115. If you just do the county seat mayors, then
yeah,
you can limit that.
I don't know that's the case in every state, though. I'm not aware. Are you aware, Gerard, of any county seat mayors here in New York?
No, we don't have county seat mayors. What
we have a mayor
is a step up from a town supervisor. A mayor runs the town, but he has certain authorities.
Yeah, but not counties. He runs cities, towns.
No, county, they have over here. They have county legislators. They call them. They didn't always have that though. They used to have what they called the Board of Supervisors, which was the supervisor from every town, got together and they ran the county, how to spend the county.
Right.
So now, over here, they've raised them up to what they call a legislator. So, yes, you can target the county legislators or their Board of Supervisors, whichever they have. I prefer a Board of Supervisors, and let me tell you what. They switch all the time. They don't like the board.
Yeah, but still, if you're looking to do a paper to all those people, even just on the county level, it's 3,143 alone. I mean, it's going to be huge for us to go after the sheriffs at that level. I mean, huge.
Well, I was thinking from a fact standpoint, not a paper.
Well,
we
can send papers through the facts. They're not going to take it as serious as if you do a paper and you talk about subversion against the United States of America through this, and that the governor is responsible for his state to make sure. Look at, you know, who's able to call out the militia when there's subversion involved? Who's able to call out the necessary enforcement? And, of course, it's the president of the United States and the governor. If there's a problem in the state, it's the governor's business to deal with that. If there, and this is subversion, So we can couch this paper in such a way as to really go after the governor to be responsible for the subversion that has taken place within his state.
Yeah, if they're going to use foreign troops to enforce this, guess what? The militia better be called out, and the governor better do it. And as far as the towns and the counties go, look at everybody should be sending paperwork to their county supervisors and their legislators. I mean, we could kind of do that ourselves too. People have to activate as far as that goes. I don't know, like John says, if we're going to be able to send official paperwork to all of them because of the logistics.
Well, I think an official paper is what's necessary for this at this point in time. And again, it could be done with 50. Plus 94. We do it in the federal courts and, of course, in all 94 of them, and we do each governor individually. He's the only name on that. Maybe we'll throw a few other names on that, but he's the only basic name on that, and we go after him in the federal court. And the key thing is he has to respond with obedience or show cause on why he's not going to. And that puts him in a situation he's got an answer. Now, we did this with Jade Helm, not in a way. We did it with an information to governors at that time. I don't think we – I'm pretty sure we did it as an information. And remember, we were talking about notifying the towns and the villages and so on because and the counties because they were the ones given the okay to go forward in their counties or their towns and their cities or whatever.
Well, they get the governor's permission first.
Well, we went directly to the governor.
Right.
And look what happened. Jade Helm was about to explode, and we finally got that paper out, on a wing and a prayer 2 weeks before the date, and then all of a sudden it went silent. And why? Because I think it had everything to do with what we'd done and gave them the threat of the fact that if they go forward with on their soil, they're responsible, and they'll be held liable for subversion against the United States of America. This is and we laid out the case on the paper. I think it was a good case that we had laid out on that paper. We could do the same thing with anything in any state and focus in on the governor. This will save a lot on the one first, and it goes right to the top.
Can I interject something? You said on the paperwork tonight you addressed Agenda 21. Could you also include this Vision 2030 in that same paragraph?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We can put that in there.
Yeah,
2030,
yeah.
Is it called?
It's called Vision 2030, and it is Stacy was talking about. It has been implemented in a number of cities all over the United States as well. It hasn't been officially the hammer come down and all that stuff, which happens on January 1. But this is a throwback, actually, from two things. It's the progressive movement that came forth in the 1930s being replayed again, but it's also, I don't know if you recall, back in the mid-1990s, Al Gore and his clan with the climate warming and all that business came forth with all the biospheres, and that's basically what they want to take these towns across the United States and turn them into biospheres and move the people out of the cities into these control environments and move the rural people out of the rural area where they can't control them and into these cities with these little 500 square foot family boxes that people live into to control.
Right, well,
them.
Look, we can accommodate this. As a matter of fact, because we're talking about this, it's starting to make me think about a few things and maybe we should give, because we had commands on the end, we only had one command to the governor per se, but maybe we should give a second command concerning Agenda 21 and Vision 2030. Now, Agenda 21, we know, is spelt, capital A, for Agenda, space, number 21. Now, for Vision 2030, is it Vision, space, 2030?
Yes.
There's no hyphens, no periods, just Vision 2030.
I don't think so. I don't have that paper. I don't have that paper dialed up.
We could probably Google it, though.
Yeah, we'll Google and see where it goes. But we'll definitely add it in, and we'll also add a command in there. So we'll cover it right now. We'll add a command in there concerning, the governor being responsible to make sure, and we'll figure out the right words, but to make sure that these communistic ideals covered by Agenda 21 and 220 and Vision 2030? Is that implemented within the towns, the cities, the counties, and so on and so forth? And he'd be responsible for it. And again, it's subversion against the United States of America. We'll figure some language and put it in there and try to take the opportunity to cover this base on this paper.
Right. Save a couple of nickels and get it all in one paper.
A whole bunch of nickels, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly have our work cut out, don't we? It never ends. They never stop. They're so tireless. But that's only because they're not busy making a living. They already stole all their money, and they're busy trying to affect our living.
And I also wanted to say something regarding what you said, Gerard, regarding calling in. Calling into your governors and calling into your senators and calling into whoever. We used to implement that in Arkansas through another organization called Secure Arkansas, and we found that if there was a bill coming up on the legislature side and they were trying to pass something or get it through committee, if we had five or six people in the entire state call, these people went on high alert because nobody ever calls them. Nobody, everybody's sitting there watching TV and not paying attention, and nobody's calling. If they got five people calling in, they went on high alert. 15 people called in, they practically, they didn't want to answer the phone. They were fear somebody was going to come get them.
Yeah, see, that's their perspective.
That's the leverage. Yeah.
You know, look at everything they do is psyops, and it's a self-policing system. And who's policing it?
Nobody.
We are.
Yeah.
By cooperating.
Yeah, exactly.
They're watching television instead.
Presumptive law. You get it.
Exactly. So there you have it. You know, they get unnerved with five people. Imagine that. Boy, we can't do that.
Out of the entire state, you know. So if you got a case going across the country, you get 20 people calling from all over the country. They're on the spotlight. They think the TVs are coming.
Right. Well, that's good. I appreciate that. Thank you for all that. And we certainly will implement working on that.
Okay, what I just want to finalize here before, I know we've run into a lot of time in this other presentation. I wanted to mention on this chart that JP has organized, if we can just implement a couple of these at a time, like doing number 14, everybody in all across the country do 14.
Right.
And then go to the next one, everybody do 8 and 13, and you've eliminated all but about 62 out of the 165 just with those three issues, and then go down to all the sheriffs. That's number 12, or do 6, 7, and 10, and that eliminates a whole bunch more. But if you just do two at a time with all the states and everybody get involved in all the states in their states, and rather than somebody listening to the phone call at night said, okay, I can do number 8 in my state, rather than saying that, call up JP. Say that my name is so-and-so, I'm working on number 8 in my state, here's my phone number, I'll be taking care of that. Then we know that that is being taken care of and nobody's duplicating that, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because some Mary Jane might say, okay, I can do it, and then John over here says he can do it, so you got two people working on the same thing and wasting, 5 days worth of work. So if they call into or email or somehow contact JP and let him know what they're working on, then somebody else can work on something else. Somebody might call him, well, I want to do number 8. Well, 8's already taken care of. Can you do number 5 or 6 or whatever, I mean?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we gave JP an email, didn't we? JP@nationallibertyalliance.org?
Yes.
Did we have that? Did we do that?
Okay. Okay.
Gary, are you here?
He's probably long gone, Gary. He's 10 o'clock, he turns into a...
Yeah,
pumpkin.
Look, I want to just reiterate, because people don't always pay attention as well as they should. In order to get to that flow chart, you go to the directory and the highlight directory, and the drop down box says elected official status page, and you click on that. And then that'll bring you to the document? Yeah, the Excel chart with all the information that's missing or there that you can tell who needs what. But like he said, make sure you get a hold of JP if you're going to do one, and just double check that nobody else took that one already.
And one more thing: when you call in, some people have courtroom experience. They've been looking at all these documents, for the last 15 years, trying to figure out their case or whatever problem they confronted with. they're familiar with looking at these documents. They can find them now very easily. Those people should be calling up JP and saying, I can find this organization. I can do this. I can do that. And get, because that's the hardest part of this whole thing, is finding where the, what site that information's on. If you had a lot of people working on that aspect, then somebody else could come in and say, okay, I can do the copy and paste to get all the information together, and then a third person can come in and just they're good on Excel, and they can do the spreadsheet itself, copy and paste, and get the whole job done.
Right.
Then we could get something going here as a team effort. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And some people can do all those things, but a lot of people, most people can't, and some people aren't proficient in Excel, and they say, well, I don't want to volunteer because I can't do Excel. Somebody else can do Excel. I got somebody right now up in Iowa. One guy's doing the research for the mayors, and another person is doing the spreadsheet for the mayors. So.
Right, right. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Very good. So I hope everybody paid attention on how to get there and what to do, and we need to do that soon because these are issues that are knocking on our door, so to
they
speak,
are.
Right
they
now.
Are. They are.
Okay? I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. I yield.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, Washington. It looks like Aileen, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, and thank you for all of the wonderful information brought forward. On January 1st, 2016, I will end my 12 years of having a front row seat as an elected official, a water commissioner, where I have done my due diligence. And as I did my due diligence, I'm going, oh my, how is this happening? Simple description for it. The puzzle came out to be the New World Order. To have a new world order, you have to have an operating plan. That operating plan is the UN Agenda 21. So when you have the operating plan, you have to have your divisions, and those are all of the states, and they're done through the ICLEI, or the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, which feed our growth management plans and our sustainability plans. And in the state of Washington, before ICLEI, as they're referred to, took down their members list, I found that there were 29 cities and counties in Washington state that are a member with tax-paying dues, our money, to belong to ICLEI. So I find
which
found
is great
that,
because it's a foreign corporation that they're signing contracts with.
Oh, yes, exactly.
You're
well, I'm really excited. I'm really excited because, you know, my 12 years is coming to an end, and I have a story to call from Inside, and it started with water fluoridation. But there's a couple of really important things that I would like to share with you about the NSA and smart meters from the earlier callers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're aware that on November 30th, when the clock struck 12 a.m. on Thanksgiving, the National Security Agent, NSA, was forced to end virtually all metadata collection of phone calls in the U.S. Very interesting how this news thing came out. NASA metadata collection has come to an official end. Well, Judge Andrew Napolitano said nothing substantial has changed, and that claims made by politicians that a court order is needed under the USA Freedom Act, whereas one was not previously requested, are misleading. Then this, when politicians tell you that the NSA needs a court order in order to listen to your phone calls or read your emails, they are talking about a FISA court order. That is based on government need, not a constitutional court order, which can only be based on probable cause, said Napolitano. This is an insidious and unconstitutional bait and switch. So, but by the time this bill got through the next week and that, it got pretty watered down, but it is a step forward. and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it's interesting that they gave them 6 months to stop, and my feeling was is they were probably only needed 6 months to get everything that they needed anyway. They've been doing it for how many years?
Yeah.
So they gave them 6 months. Look, they got all the information they need anyway. They got all our data. Oh, you better stop that 6 months from now. That's baloney. Yeah.
Well, yeah, like they tried to thought they were going to do it in shutting off the water and in the power.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, though, because we could go on and on and on about that, but I just thought it was interesting that the judge, Pontanalo, was making these rulings.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Seattle, regarding the smart meters, working with Josh DeSole from Take Your Power Back and Cal Washington, we are in the notice of liability concerning the harm and the trespassing of the technology of the smart meters, and we have now done the next step on sending them a true bill and accounting. Since we have started this process, we have had three council members, the most vested ones, step down, did not rerun, and also Ore Carrasco, who was the head of the CEO for Seattle Public Utilities, stepped down after 13 years. We don't know, but we kind of think this might have had an impact, as well as the one that about 200 people signed on to in Kelowna, British Columbia, and their CEO of the power company, Corex, or whatever they call it up there, stepped down. So we seem to be having some effect in some impact on these smart meters here, but boy, what a fight this has been here in Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've been sending these to not only the Seattle City Light, Seattle Public Utilities, the mayor, all of the city council, assistant attorneys, two of them, the AMI program manager, and the City of Seattle Light Department.
Well, that's good. I don't know. You know, the fact of the matter is on one hand, they want to give us smart meters and watch everything. And on the other hand, they have new technology and they've made laws to decentralize the power and put in power plants in each little town so that they can't be knocked out. And we have all this new Tesla technology where you'll be able to make your own power outside of your house. So I don't know what they think they're doing. There's releasing of new technology coming, and yet the smart meter, the new technology will completely defeat the smart meter unless they're not going to let us have this technology scot-free. They're going to put their smart meters on it, and they want to control it. That's probably what their goal is. But
we have the way. We have the way, and our will, though, is we have to take them down so we can have our way. And I am so excited that in one door closing, I have another one opening, and that I have found the light with the NLA, because I have been working with these people who are in the dark and are just nothing but mind-programmed UN Agenda 2030 people. And to see what you have done and how I am getting involved in it, and now, Abel, I would send you guys a check and have been a court observer, I have never been so excited as I go through this transition of moving from working with the people in the dark to moving with the people here in the light. So thank you.
There you go. Thank you very much. And what did our forefathers say? The truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. You know, we have to proclaim the truth. That's the first step to winning it and getting it out there. So look at get off the grid, people. Get your own power generators and defeat them that way if you have to, you know. But anyway, thank you very much, Arlene.
Well, and yes, and I'd like to also share some other news. I have been given a platform to go forward with the truth, and I'm working with David Spring and others, but David Spring, I don't know if you are familiar with him. He wrote the book Free Yourself from Microsoft and the NSA.
No, I'm not. No.
Incredible, brilliant man. And he is in the process of launching a new program on using the Linux Mint and giving us a place to do Northwest Independent News and joint actions, which will actually go more beyond just the Northwest. So we are calling it Ninja. Ninjin for the Northwest Independent News Joint Action. It is Ninjin, and it's soon to be launched and go public.
That's wonderful.
And it has an alternative to Fakebook.
Fakebook, yes. Well, we need the alternative news, because if it wasn't for that, there'd be nothing. And that's one reason they want to control the internet. Because that's what they don't have control over, and the average person is figuring out that, you know, the managed news media is just that, it's managed. So those are good things, and as long as we can keep doing that, we'll keep going along, we'll keep going ahead. And with the help of God, because look at, we have his help now, because if we didn't, we wouldn't be on this medium tonight. They would have already shut us down. So this type of stuff is what's killing them, and they know it. And there's obviously a restraining hand here on them. That's
well, I know that I am being led by a greater power, especially when I do the reflection on the many years that I have been alive. And the best lesson I ever had came from my daddy when he said he did his best to teach me to know the difference between right and wrong. And when I go in and I look at all of the laws, and especially as John was reading those six pages tonight, it just took my breath away to see common sense about what is right for we the people.
Yes, that's what it's about, common sense, and that's what has been very uncommon.
Well, you know, I'm going from being just about the only elected official I know that I liked into being a whistleblower.
Yeah. Well,
but,
God bless
you, know,
and be with you. Be careful.
Well, yeah, believe me, I will, because, you know, as I go forward, I'm going forward with the NLA because you have the way.
Thank you very much. Okay, is that
I
it?
Yield.
Thank you
I
very
yield.
Much, Arlie. Yeah. Okay, next caller, Arkansas State. Or did we do that already, Stacy?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay, I had one more item that I needed to speak about, and I'll do it real quick. Everybody's familiar with Sheriff Mack?
Yes.
Okay, I am in touch with a gentleman who is, he's been very integral with the CSPOA, and he's also been involved with the Clive and Bundy issue. He was integral in getting that thing pulled together to bring the forces together to fight the BLM.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the Hammond issue that is occurring right now, which apparently is their neighbors.
Yeah.
This gentleman that I'm speaking with, his name is Dean Duglietto. He is a integral part of what I'm doing here, and he will be on the phone with Sheriff Mack within the next day or so, and Sheriff Mack is very interested. He's already expressed the interest in training his sheriffs so that they know their rights, their duties, and the way to do them. I've been working hard with trying to get us to work with the CSPOA and Sheriff Max, because I believe that what we do goes hand in hand with what he's doing with the sheriffs. He's got the sheriffs. We've got, you know, the rest of the situation. So within the next day or two, there will be a conversation held that Sheriff Mack will be considering having a conversation with us. He already is considering having a conversation with us about not joining forces, but having an alliance of some sort to where these sheriffs can get trained properly. So I just wanted to update everybody on that I am still on that.
Well, I don't know how many of his members of the CS POA know about us. But I've got to, you know, we've put a lot of good stuff out for the sheriffs. And I'll tell you, you know, if they, a lot of people say they're, I believe in the Constitution, I'm a constitutionalist, but they really don't know the Constitution at all, really. They don't know the the chapter and verse and where the stuff comes from. But our civics course is a great starting place for anybody. I mean, look, we make anybody that wants to be an administrator has to go through that because it's your basic stuff. And with that foundation, it's easy to digest the rest of it when it comes along. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So right. I would direct them there. Let them go in and see the civics course. Let them see some of the stuff. You know, we have the power of the county sheriff, and by what authority that you know where he is in history. It's all laid out where he gets his power from and why he's important. And we definitely have a symbiotic relationship between the sheriff and the grand jury. I mean, you know, you're going to call grand juries and you need enforcement. The highest law enforcement, elected law enforcement official in the land is the sheriff. It's a no-brainer. The grand jury is the tribunal, you know, and the sheriff is the one that implements the enforcement. You know, I mean that's right. What they do. They take the orders from the court and they serve them. Well, who is the court? Well, the grand jury,
the grand jury.
Is the tribunal. Well, they're the court,
right?
So it's a hand-in-hand relationship. You can't expect to do one without the other, you know?
Right.
And look, it's no difference from having a prepper attitude. Let me tell you something. You can prepare all you want, buy your castle on the top of the hill and everything. If you don't have a neighborhood and you don't have neighbors, you ain't going to survive alone. It's not going to happen. You need...
Right.
You need that relationship. You need that community. You know what I mean? You have to sleep, and you have to get other things from other people's. And this, and as far as the sheriff and the grand jury goes, it's a no-brainer in my mind.
Well, that's where I feel, you know, like you said, the whole symbiotic relationship comes into play because he's at a stage where he wants to begin training his sheriffs and his members on their rights and their abilities and their duties as sheriff and peace officers, and we have that in place already. So working hand in hand with him on this is, I believe, something that will propel us in an exponential factor to have to achieve the goals of their organization and ours.
Right. Well, if you're gonna be talking to him, you should
direct him
to some of our writing.
Let me pipe something in real quick. You know, if you got to make sure if you're gonna have the opportunity to talk to him, make sure that he understands the process.
I will not. Let me just first of all say that I will not talk to him. What I am doing is I am working through Dean. Dean is in contact with Sheriff Mack, and he's going to be. Is Gary on the line?
No, he's off right now.
Okay, I have already had Dean get in contact with Gary, okay? They have already had a conversation about this. If anything transpires from this conversation, it will go to you guys.
Here's something that's extremely important that you're going to want to pass on to Dean then, okay?
Okay.
Because I don't know if Gary would have had this on the top of his mind, and this is the key thing. You know, if he's going to be a constitutional officer and he's going to be taught the Constitution and so on and so forth, he also has to understand the difference of what's going on. His real work is really in the courts. And he's also to be charged not only of the jail, but also of the bailiffs. They should be all working for the Sheriff's Department because that's part of their process. But point is this, if the sheriff cannot recognize certain things about the court that's unconstitutional, that's a due process problem. For instance, summary decisions cannot be made. You know, when a judge makes a summary decision, that's null and void. How many sheriffs possibly know that? How many people would know that by even studying the Constitution? Because it's a little hard to see. I mean, you really have to have a little bit of an in-depth understanding of the Constitution to see that point. And you have to have the knowledge of what summary decisions are all about. Also, the fact that they're running a chancery court. How is that recognized? How do you recognize a chancery court? When a person comes up and challenges jurisdiction, the unalienable right to have that response, what is the jurisdiction I'm in? And the judge must must respond common law, and if he doesn't and he continues, he has just violated that person's unalienable rights. So there's a whole list of things that sheriffs need to know and understand. And if Sheriff Mack is going to educate these people, hopefully he's going to find somebody that has enough of an in-depth understanding of the court system to be able to express that. Well, at this point, Sheriff Mack is not interested in working with us, but maybe he's changing his mind. I mean, that'd be good.
Well, that's what this whole conversation is about, because it's my understanding that a few years ago this subject was broached between the two groups, and at that time it was declined. I believe there is a reconsideration process going on
great.
At this
that's
point.
Great. We'd have to have dialogue to help him with those things.
And that's what I'm trying to establish, and I will not be the one having that dialogue. I will be forwarding that on to way up the chain, much higher than me. And again, to address what you were talking about, if we can get these sheriffs educated, and then the sheriffs can take that responsibility to educate their bailiffs and to have that roll downhill, then that is just... I think that's cream on top of everything, and I think that it gets us back to being a constitutional society.
Well, absolutely, 100%. And what has to be understood, and I don't know if it's understood, you see, the bailiff in the court is the sheriff in the court. He
right.
should be working for that county sheriff. He shouldn't be employed. He should have sheriff's department or deputy sheriff or whatever it is. He can have
I believe they do.
But he has to be not all
not
of them.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
No, some of them have.
Not all of them?
No.
They have
okay.
corporate. They have corporate bailiffs.
They got corporate.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so this is one of the things that sheriffs need to understand. If they don't have a sheriff in that courtroom, then that's not a legal courtroom. Because the sheriff and the coroner is part of the process. Now, the coroner is only necessary there, of course, with a murder. Okay, but the mm-hmm. sheriff is necessary there through the whole trial, through everything. And any need
right.
for any kind of a support, the sheriff has to be reached out to, either by the jury or by a judge or anyone else. We'd love to have conversation and dialogue here.
Excellent. So that's what I was going to say, is that it, to summarize and to, you know, to make sure that I'm understanding clearly, that we are interested in working with the sheriff and helping him educate his sheriffs. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely.
As a matter of
okay.
fact, that's what we're doing.
Okay.
We are educating sheriffs.
And that's exactly the conversation I've been having with Dean concerning this, mm-hmm. is that we are already doing this. We are already sending out packets of information. We are already attempting to bring them into the NLA website and to get involved in the courses and things of that nature in order for them to have the education that they need to do their job properly. So again, having Sheriff Mack, he has already expressed the interest to go ahead and start this process in his organization for his sheriffs. So if we've already got that in place, it just seems logical that instead of him having to start from scratch and do everything from the get-go, that we go ahead and, you know, form some sort of an alliance or agreement to where, you know, we get them involved and we begin training with them.
Right.
And I think that just enhances the relationship all the way around.
Yes, and look, they're absolutely welcome to use anything of ours that we're using. I mean, as far as educating sheriffs go, I don't think there's anything that we say about the sheriff or teach about the sheriff that anybody would have anything against, that there would be any reason. As a matter of fact,
how could
we we empower the sheriff. We
right.
look, if they're trying to make them messenger boys for the court, you know, the trend is to minimize the sheriff
right
now. And they're trying. As a matter of fact, they're getting rid of them in certain states. So anything we say or we do is only more empowering. Anybody's welcome to read what we have on there. They'd be surprised at the power the sheriffs have. And my thing with the sheriffs is, I in my personal experience, I find that they have a better time standing up against the feds than they do standing up against their own state judges and things, because they're a political animal, and it's very hard for them on the local level to stick to the Constitution, because they run amok of the, well, look, they're a party animal, too. They're either Democrat.
Well, they're afraid to stand up against them because the people aren't involved enough to back them up.
That's right. If they had their constituents, they could do it.
Yes.
You cannot send the sheriff up the hill with his sword out, and he turns around and there's nobody behind him. Look,
right.
If he goes after a judge, he's committing, he's putting himself on the line personally and politically, professionally.
Absolutely.
They're going to want to get rid of him. Now, we've seen other sheriffs that have survived it because they have a good constituency, and they can't do anything with them, and they don't look at you can't fire an elected official. You got to indict him, or they call Article 78. So if he has constituents in his county, enough of them that come forward, they won't be able to do anything to him. They won't be able to get rid of him, and that's what
right.
We want to do. We want to empower him. Well, the way we're going to empower him is to support him and bring the constituents out.
Yes. Is that part of the agenda of our sheriff's committee? Is to maybe get a group of citizens in each county to come together.
Absolutely.
To support the sheriff? Okay,
yes.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
We've talked to them. Look, we got a couple of sheriffs. They're ready. I had to hold them off because you can't go up there and do this because they're in states with sparser populations and they don't have a lot of people yet. And look, you better have 50, 100 dedicated people in his county because that's the smaller – look, in those counties, 50 votes make an election, okay? You can't do that in the Northeast. So I have a lot of faith – I have a lot of hope, I should say – In the sparsely populated states, that those are the ones that we're going to get the sheriffs to do the right thing first, because it takes less people. However, I don't know if that's true because we're having trouble even getting together 20 people. What's it take to get people to come forward? We're also telling people, especially oath keepers and things like that, to run for sheriff. You get a sheriff that's not constitutionally doing the wrong things. Run on a common law ticket. Say, what could be more refreshing? Hey, I'm not going to enforce all these stupid statutes. If there's no injured party, there's no crime. Start talking the common law. Start talking the Constitution. And I think that's a campaign platform that would run you right to the top. I think people
absolutely.
Are fed up with all this.
I agree.
And
I would like to touch on that, Gerard. I have for the past 7-8 months, I have been very socially ingrained on the internet social media sites. Okay, I've been trying to get the word out about the 2030 agreement. I've been spreading the NLA. I've been working. I'm a member of the CSPOA as well. And I've been trying to perpetuate that. I have in coordination with two other people, have started a countrywide rally on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, that everybody's coming out to their own city hall with a sign that they make, and going to stand there for a half hour, an hour, 2 hours, however long they want to, and just with a sign that they say, this is what we're doing. Now, there is an awakening occurring among the population right now. I mean, it is literally exploding. People are sick and tired of what's going on. People are fed up with what Obama is doing. They feel like he is a complete traitor and a foreign agent because of all the things that he's doing against our country. They don't believe that, or they do believe that Congress is completely ingrained with the whole thing because they're not doing anything to stand up against it. There was just a poll on a major website. It said, do you think that Obama should be arrested immediately for treason? 97% of Americans said yes. Okay? Now, there is an awakening. This is the point that I want to make. Right now, there is a momentum of an awakening occurring. I have a group on Facebook, okay? And just in the last week, I've jumped from 800 members to over 3,000.
Right.
Just in the past week, okay? And I guarantee you, if I get on there right now, I'm approaching 4,000.
Right. Well, the word is getting out, and we tell people to get on that social media and use it because, you know, it's good for that. So, look at
Whoever runs our Facebook thing, they know that I'm constantly posting about all of this stuff and the NLA stuff as well, because I'm a member there as well, and you're part of the groups that I post in. I've got about 25, 27 groups that I post in that touch base with about 50,000 people.
Right.
Okay. So I'm on top of trying to spread the word and gain this momentum, and I've got a lot of people that are really turning the tide.
You know what else, Stacy? If you're on that social media, you should push forward some of the things that we're doing when we have if we're featuring a case that needs a call out or in an area, throw it up there because look at that. Those people can if they're local and they can show up to a court. That's how we'll get members. Just put it out.
Well, and that was something else that I wanted to approach, but I know it's getting late. I do have that base of to be able to touch base with many people, and if I am sent an email alert of something like that, I will certainly post it, and I'll touch all these people, and I can put out post directly requesting, listen, if you are sick and tired, if you're fed up, if you really want to invoke the power that you have as a United States citizen under the Constitution, touch base with me, and I'm going to give you something that you can do right away that will make a huge and to work with the sheriffs and to, you know, be a courtroom observer or maybe even a jury administrator. There's many things that you can do as a person in your town to directly affect what is occurring. So, again, I would love to be a part of that as well.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go to the next guy. We'll continue this conversation. There's
okay,
lots of
thank
things
you.
That we can do. So
yes.
I appreciate your remarks. And let me get the next question here. And,
you got it.
And we'll continue this.
Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah.
I yield.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. It's a wireless caller with 8187. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hang on a second.
Okay, I hear you.
Okay, good. This is what happened. We're talking about a CPS case right now. DCF. Our child was seized at a hospital. We had a home birth on 11/19. Me and my spouse, my neighbor, who's a real full-fledged supporter of National Alliance, which is why we're calling. But it's quite hard to explain, but... It was a home birth that was desecrated. An emergency was called. I consented to the ride, but what happened is there was, I guess, a habeas corpus, and they seized the child at the hospital and then allowed his sister, foster parents, but DCF took immediate custody. And I've dealt with these official-like people in the last 10 years, and I've been stonewalled, and I can't explain what's gone on with me in the past, but it's pretty bad. What they did is they took two children of mine and from birth, another two children, and what did they do exactly? They claimed me as incompetent. A public defender stood up for me and didn't put me in my light at all. And when I asked for a trial before we walked into the courtroom, she railroaded me. But I asked for her to step down from the case. She's saying she's going to step down. I said, look, this is what you told me, you're wasting my time. They told me to sit down and shut up. And I had already put my whole case together at the time. So, and I'm doing that again now, and it's pretty sad. What happens, the judge said he was going to reunite with my children. I consented to the steps eventually, but I really don't agree with all this. I know you guys...
Did you fill up an intake form for habeas corpus? And they didn't provide habeas corpus to take your child. They provided a warrant, and they went through. You know, and it wasn't even legal anyway. But are you interested in a habeas corpus for us to do one?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be appearing in court.
Did you fill out the intake paper and get all the paper together and your affidavit?
No, not yet, but that's why I'm calling you. If there's something, as far as words, I mean, words are very powerful. I mean, I hate to use the word even powerful.
Yeah, well, everything necessary for you to know and do, and any help that you're going to get is along the process of what we set up. If you go to the right-hand side of our site and click on the frowny face, the upside-down happy face that's got holding up the sign, help, click on that, and then just follow through the breadcrumbs to whichever type of case you've got, and then follow all the instructions. And then when you get to the point of writing a sworn affidavit, you'll get a paper which is basically laying it out. You fill the information in. And then once you get it together and you send it all into intake, you'll get someone that'll contact you and go through the paperwork, make sure it's all in order, and help you with the affidavit if it needs cleaning up or whatever the case may be. And we'll just take it from there. Once the paper is perfected, then we can start moving it into the process.
Right. And now it pertains to a juvenile matter because, they have a judicial district. It's separate or whatever, a judicial court system for juvenile matter, and it's all in their jurisdiction. And when I walked in there from the first place on, with my other two children, I was railroaded. I mean, they were talking
about... Yeah,
they
don't have jurisdiction at all on you. Look, the whole process is a sham to begin with. All family court or juvenile court or whatever you want to call it, all those courts, they never consider a jury whatsoever, and they really just separate people from their children, or at least a lot of times they'll separate to one of the parents and not let the other parents see them. And look, it's just destructive.
Right. Exactly. And the words are very strong they're using. We're talking about titration and such like this. I mean, they're talking about that I have to see a state psychiatrist. And, there's with the state psychiatrist, there's something about Clockwork Orange, something about atypical antipsychotics and intramuscular injections, and this wouldn't ensure competency. I mean, I know the role of a judge and a jury and such like that, and I know constitutional right needs to be applied. I am competent, and I'm being railroaded.
They do this to everybody. They always go through the psychological side, especially when you're trying to really get involved in your case. You must be psychologically ill because you shouldn't be doing this. And remember, once you get a lawyer, depending on, sometimes they're vindictive. You've had other problems with them, you said, in the past, so they're going to be very vindictive with you, and the lawyer is going to sell you down the road in a flash. And he gets to represent you anyway through the whole thing while they just destroy your life, and it's horrible.
It is, and I'm glad I found your organization because I think that, it's given me the support right now to make sure that I stand up for my rights. It's not that I haven't in the past. I put all my court cases together, and that's the problem. I think they've seen competency, there's another situation, too, in light of the fact that I was a victim not just in the latent years of my adulthood, but in the younger years, I was locked in cages in Florida as a victim, as in the foster care system. And I'm asking right now a lawyer, I'm putting together an affidavit to award damages, and I want to get together children in this area. I mean, there were the 10 kids in Glastonbury that were locked in cages, too. And, I don't know about passing a bar to him right now, but I'm ready to make sure that these guys don't wield as much power as they do, So I think it's detrimental for me not just to be looking for help, but for people to be seeking help as well. I mean, they need to understand that there's still hope out there, regardless of...
Well, yeah, absolutely. Never give up on hope. But let me encourage you to go through the process and get that paperwork filled out as fast as you can, and we'll try to move on as quick as we can. We've pretty much come to the end. Did you want to add or ask something here, Gerard, before we close?
I want to know what state is she in, just for my own information.
I'm in the constitutional state, sir. That's where I am, Connecticut.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, the constitutional case state who got rid of the sheriff. They don't have a constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have a They obviously can't. Yeah. I caught on to the beginning of this here a long time ago. Yeah, they definitely are violating rights here. Thank you so much.
that's...
Yeah, I...
When they get rid of the constitutional officer, that's it. It's done. And that's what they've done in Connecticut. We got a big hump to go over in Connecticut, and we're ready. We're ready for that battle. As soon as we can get into the courts, we're going to go to battle with Connecticut.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's right. In Connecticut, I mean, how could you? How could you not? Yeah, and I kept saying, I remember when way back like 10 years ago when these cases all started, I said, Jesus Christ, this is a constitutional state. And you know there's a violation here, a grave violation. So, yeah, I believe that would be, in order.
Don't forget, they love irony, so that's what you have. You have irony there, don't you?
Oh, exactly. Cynical, but yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to come to an end. We've gone past our time, so we're sorry we didn't get to everyone. But anybody that is on the call that's in line here right now, next week we'll put out a call for those callers to come in first into the queue, and we'll take it from there. Anything to finalize before we close down, Gerard?
No, I'm good. A lot of information we covered, so a lot to think about.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. And please remember to support National Liberty Alliance in our effort to save America. Do whatever you can. You know, $5 a month or more is really, if everyone did that, we'd be in great shape. Also, don't forget, Tuesdays, we have a study group going on. And also, on the Lord's Day, we also have Meet the King. You know, we're doing a study in the four Gospels. So, all right. And all this is being done here in... the same room here, 11 a.m. on Sunday and 9 p.m. on Tuesday. Tuesday, right? Not Wednesday. Tuesday is the study group day, right, Gerard? Pretty sure it is.
Yes, Tuesday, yeah.
Okay, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Again, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.
God shall bless. Let the people.